Morning, everybody. Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN. Thanks for staying up a little later even tonight. Matt Bubala with you. Roger Badish in the newsroom. Jess Rains behind the glass for the first show of 2018 for the Matt Bubala Show. How are you, Mr. Badish?
I'm doing fantastic. Well, how are you?
How exciting.
Well, you know me. I'm Mr. Upbeat, Mr. Cheerful, Mr. Gung Ho.
All right. Settle down now. We got to go till 5. It's finally going to get a little warm.
Yes.
On Sunday or
little,
Monday?
Little. Monday.
Ugh, God, man. This has been a stretch.
The temperature, the thermometer temperature should be around 34, which is nice. We haven't been
that
in that
nice.
Terrier
now, are
in
we expecting
about 3
winds
weeks.
With that? Or?
See, I don't have that information
like
with me
good.
Right now. So I'm expect that you may still have to not change into your spring coat yet.
Okay. Well, yeah. Although, you know what? It hits 34 degrees. I think we're going to be walking around in shorts for a day or two because it's going to feel so ridiculously warm compared to what it's been.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, if it gets up to 34, that's 44 degrees higher than what it was last week during the day.
How crazy is that?
Yeah. Yeah.
A 44 degree swing, we're still not at 40 degrees.
Yeah, but don't get used to it.
No, we
won't.
It's
supposed to get cold again a few days after.
Well, but it's supposed to get up like by Wednesday, like in the 40s, right?
Yeah, maybe.
I think it is. I think it's supposed to get really warm for a day or so.
Mr. Optimistic, just calm down.
Boy, I'm sure I tried to jump
it's
along with you.
It's winter in Chicago.
It is. Oh, listen, I'm not saying anything else.
I know.
I know that it's brutal outside, and it's going to be brutal, and this is where we live. Did you feel a little... Because I felt a little bit of this, and I don't know if it was unwarranted, so I want to see if you're here with me or anybody else out there. By the way, welcome in, everybody, 312-981-7200. Your calls are welcome all night long, 312-981-7200. You can also text at that number to us. All of this hullabaloo about the bomb, cyclone, whatever, on the East Coast. Now, so that's what I thought at first. Like, come on, we're living with this every day, and because it's on the East Coast.
Well, no, I didn't think that.
All right, well, that's what I thought.
No.
But I will say this. Have you been looking at some of the video? Mm-hmm. So, like, we had the Weather Channel on last night at home, and I'm seeing online a lot of video that's being posted of, is it a harbor in Boston or in Maine or whatever?
Oh, it's just the water kicks up over the shore. We have it here, too.
Yeah, but nobody's parking on our shore. You're smart enough just not to drive
there. But people are walking, and there have been reports over the last couple of years. People
sweat there for? Why would you do that? That's crazy.
They want to see it.
Well, that's just not being smart.
But
I've also seen streets, Raj. I've seen streets. I saw a video tonight of a fire truck trying to get to something, driving through literally waist-high water.
Yes.
And I'm thinking, God, I hope this fire truck... You know, I guess maybe they build them to withstand that, but I'm thinking this dude's going to get caught, and then they're not helping anybody.
But see, Chicagoans don't care about that, and they all would have been driving along with the fire truck, like right behind it, so they know, the fire truck's going to spread the water out, and it won't be so high if we're right on his bumper. That's what we do here in Chicago because we're used to it.
Now, I didn't see anybody else driving by the fire truck.
Wasn't.
He was just driving. You're right.
People would have been
right behind him. Yeah, because here in Chicago, when it's snowing real bad, people are stupid enough to still get on Lakeshore Drive.
No, we're not stupid enough.
Okay.
You don't want to take there. Don't make me come down there.
I've never heard of anybody getting caught and stuck on Lakeshore Drive in a snowstorm, Roger.
Drive. Never happened in a million seven
people
years.
Aren't silly enough to do something like that.
No.
So I felt a little bit... So I was really like, ugh, stupid Boston, Northeast, whatever. And then I saw some of the video. I'm like, all right, that's a pretty good storm.
Look, they got a lot of snow pretty in parts, especially up farther up north.
But not only did they get snow, but they had hurricane force winds.
So we've had 50, 60 mile an hour. Excuse me. Were you stuck on Lakeshore Drive having icicles stabbing you in the face?
No, I heard the weather was coming and I stayed in. Were there 60-mile-an-hour winds?
I was on a job.
I was reporting. Were there 60-mile-an-hour winds that night, or is that fake news?
No, it was not fake news.
Because, Monday night are the big fake news awards. So if you want to give out some fake news, we could get your submission in.
I know.
It's not too late.
That was the truth. In fact,
60-mile-an-hour winds during that
That was
storm?
My estimate. And then...
Wait a minute. That was real?
If I can reach through this camera...
Winds, that was my estimate.
If I can reach through this camera...
You can't. I'm safely ensconced in the showcase studio.
Now, I want you to genuflect, because I'm about to use a revered name. Tom Skilling.
Well, Roger, I got to tell you that the storm surge was really great that night, but the winds were more like 12 miles an hour. You're just a snowflake.
Yeah, and guess what he said? He said the winds were 60 miles an hour off the lake that night.
Pull the tape. Sure he said that, or was that
positive?
Was that on deep... deep background.
Deep background. No. That was to the public that night. 60-mile-an-hour
I want you
winds
to pull that tape. Well, that's nasty winds.
You know.
And so that's why people get caught. Well, Roger, if you wouldn't have been out on Lakeshore Drive in the 60-mile-an-hour winds, you would have gotten home safely.
Well, Matt, you know.
Gotta love Tom Skilling.
Love Tom Skilling.
815 says, so what happened out east was really just a blizzard. It was a blizzard, but
yes.
It wasn't just a blizzard. Because
it was a blizzard. What is the definition of a blizzard?
I have no idea. A lot of snow and a lot of wind. That's my guess. But, here goes Rob Librarian. Roger will now be looking up the definition of a blizzard. But I will say this, Raj. They were saying in the news that when the storm was first being reported that the pressure or something was dropping to a level that is never, ever, ever seen in winter weather. There was something very different about this. It wasn't just, hey, here's a blizzard. It was some sort of crazy, perfect storm, right? And I think, while Boston and some of the eastern areas, Portland, Maine was being featured heavily on the Weather Channel, while those areas got hit really bad, I believe the very worst parts of it were actually out at sea. Like if there would have been land a little further out, really would have been.
Did
even
you see
nastier,
that one tourist boat, the ship that was trying to get through the waters?
No.
That's another video you have to watch. So, in the U.S., the National Weather Service defines a blizzard as a severe snowstorm characterized by strong winds causing blowing snow that results in low visibilities. Difference between a blizzard and a snowstorm is the strength of the wind, not the amount of snow. To be a blizzard, a snowstorm must have sustained winds or frequent gusts that are greater than or equal to 35 miles an hour. We have had that here in Chicago ad infinitum.
Sure, we have all the time.
Blowing this or drifting snow, which reduces visibility to a quarter mile or less and must last for a prolonged period of time, typically 3 hours or more.
So this was, in fairness to the East Coast, this was almost 50 to 60 mile an hour winds in places, right?
Right.
And lasted way more than 3 hours.
That's a severe blizzard then.
Okay, we'll give them severe blizzard.
Severe.
I will also say that I understand the Weather Channel. I understand there's a million cable channels. I know you got to grab your news where you can. Quit naming the stupid winter storms. Just stop it. That's not your job. You don't get to just, I'm sorry if they're a sponsor right now, but that's like the Weather Channel's become the star registry. Just hey, we're naming this storm. We decided we can, and so now we did.
Have a storm named after you.
Yeah, maybe they should start doing that. That's probably next.
You know what they should do is name it after ex-spouses. I mean,
this is Storm George who stuck it to me in the divorce. Yeah. Okay, well, there's that. But 312-981-7200. Matt Bubala with you. The first show of 2018. We're excited to be here. I am, it's funny. So I'm reading the Michael Wolff book, Fire and Fury.
Yeah.
I went out to buy it today at my local Barnes & Noble. They were sold out. I thought, wow, you're sold out. How many copies do you have? Only 8. Okay.
What? Well, that's all they have?
So it's not a story. Well, so I was on with John Williams for a couple minutes today, and because I'd run out to buy the book, he told me to call in.
Okay.
And I said to him, I don't know what, that's not very many, and nobody had them. So I went on the Barnes & Noble website, see if there's another local Barnes & Noble that had them in. A, there aren't going to be any other local Barnes & Nobles, because let's face it, bookstores are dying, and there's not that many of them. But there are Barnes & Nobles around, not nearly as many as there used to be, right? But there are. And only like 3 out of the 20 within 25 miles of me had them in stock at all.
Oh.
And I don't know how many they even had. Who knows if I would have gotten there if they would have had them left.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But John told me that they pushed up the publication date. The publication date was a little further back, but once things started leaking and the president was threatening to sue, blah, 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 they hurried up and got them out there. So that's why there's so few. If you go online at Amazon and Barnes & Noble, there's a wait. I think I want to say on Amazon it said it wouldn't ship until at least the 10th.
Oh,
I think on Barnes & Noble it said up to 2 weeks. So there's definitely a back order for these.
Yeah, sure.
So I went ahead and I bought it on iBooks on my iPad.
Which
I've never done before. Even though I've had an iPad forever, I never got a Kindle. I really like holding a book in my hand. I'm reading right now there's a new book out, relatively new book, I think it came out in November, about Golda Meir called Lioness.
because I want to learn more about Israel, because I think that's going to be a big news topic this year. And I really, I'll admit, I'm pretty ignorant to the whole thing. I don't know how it all started, blah, blah, blah. So a friend of mine recommended this book. So I have this book, and I have the big hard copy. It's a huge book. It's like 700 pages. And I'm trying to read it when I go to bed every night. I can't get comfortable reading in bed. I can't sit up high enough.
Why don't you get one of those... Special pillows with the little arms on the side, so you can sit up straight. You got support for your head.
Maybe I could do that.
That's what you need.
Tall enough to have support for your head if you're sitting up straight.
Well, then put a pillow underneath.
Well, I tried that. I took one of Colleen's pillows and I propped up, and so I started doing that. I got a little more.
But if you use a regular pillow and prop it up the long way, your body just keeps sliding down.
Yeah,
you need to get a wedge underneath your knees. That's what it is. A wedge underneath your knees, and now you won't slide.
This is a lot of work to read a book in bed. For goodness sakes.
You pick your battles.
We have a chair next to the bed that was the rocking chair that we bought when we first, so it's 16 years old, when Jack was first born. And so I think I might need to start sitting in that.
Well, go ahead.
But then you're not in bed and you're not ready, so I don't know what I'm going to do. Anyways.
It's a 700-page
book. I'll be done with it by June if we're lucky at the rate I'm going. Because I'm trying to be good at this year about not falling asleep on the couch and going to bed and reading, and I'm getting like 8 pages in and going to sleep, so it's terrible. I think last night I read like 30 pages. That was my big victory.
Ooh.
But so I downloaded the Michael Wolff Fire and Fury book, the President Trump book.
Mm-hmm.
I downloaded it on iBooks on my iPad, and when I went to take my nap tonight, I brought it up there. And I really, and it's very easy to read in bed.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier to hold an iPad than a 700-page book.
Yeah.
And it really, I know people have been reading on these things for years, so I sound dumb coming to the party now, but
no, it's
right. Much easier on the eyes than I expected.
Yeah.
They do a very good job with that. Mm-hmm. And this one, it's interesting because I've seen people with their Kindles and their iPads before looking at books.
Mm-hmm.
This one, and I bet it's a setting I could just change.
Sure.
But, because it did change on me. Look at that. See? I don't even know how it did this.
It changes based on the amount of lights.
Is that what it's doing?
Yeah.
Because here in the studio, it's white. The pages are white, just like a regular book.
Mm-hmm.
When I was reading it at home, the page was black and the lettering was white.
Yeah. You can still change that. You can go into settings like on our script display up here.
Mm-hmm.
I can change it. I have white letters on a black background right now because I find that easier to read.
Yeah, it was really like comforting. Yeah. I was very surprised by it. I was very happy with it.
Bridget's had a Kindle for several years, and I've got an iPhone, but I have Kindle for an iPhone.
Right.
Now, the problem is there's only about 30 words on the screen at a time, and I got to keep flipping through and you miss kind of the flow of a book.
I have to say, the silliest thing that I enjoy is swiping and flipping the page and see the go.
Oh, yeah, right. Have the page actually flip.
It's so silly, but like flipping the page is oddly comforting on this goofy thing.
Well, they wanted to make it as realistic as possible.
And it was smart.
Yeah.
The funny thing is, depending on how you look at it, because sometimes I'll hold it up straight and it'll just be one page, and then you put it sideways and it'll do 2 pages. So depending on how you hold it, it changes how many pages. Mm-hmm. So when I have it sideways, it's a 640-page book. When I hold it up straight, it's like 306 pages.
Yeah.
So I'm about 20% through.
Yeah. Either way, it's still going to take you a long time.
Well, no, not the Fire and Fury book.
No, the other one.
Right. That one's going to take forever because I got that in hardcover.
But Fire and Fury, from what I've heard, it's a fairly fast read.
It is. Like, if I would have done this way earlier today and had time, I could have gotten through it probably in 3 or 4 hours.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, if you're into it, if you enjoy hearing the inner workings and the politics, it's fascinating. So you can tear through it pretty quickly, I think. And it is fascinating. And while Trump is very upset about it, understandably, because of whatever, it doesn't sound like, from what I've read and seen, a lot of people saying this is BS, except for like President Trump and Sarah Sanders are going to say that. But I haven't heard Bannon come out and say that's not true, right? I don't think he has refuted any of it.
I've heard anything from him.
And I've read a lot of other people, his boss at The Hollywood Reporter and other people confirming a lot of things that are in the book. So. Mm-hmm. It's fascinating.
And he claims he has tapes.
He sort of danced around that slightly on the Today Show. We're going to play some of that interview later on. He did say he did, but he didn't come right out and say, yeah, I've got the tapes and I'll prove it all.
Yeah.
He's sort of, and here's the problem with, you just wish it was like Vecislost or whatever his name is, or
Michael
or yeah. Woodward or somebody like that writing this book in some
right.
ways.
Mm-hmm.
In other ways, I'm glad it's this guy, but this guy's not coming off the best in these interviews to make it have the credibility that
yeah.
you hope that it has.
Because right.
I'm not saying that I want it all to be true, but I don't want it to be BS. I don't want to read this and think I'm getting an insight and then find out, oh, you know, it was
right.
a stretch.
Right.
Things like that.
Right.
Chris dialed us up at 312-981-7200. Good morning, Chris. How are you, sir?
Hey, man. I'm well. How are you?
Good. What's going on?
Long time, first time.
Excellent.
You know, with the book, I am definitely a book reader myself. I got to have a book in my hand. Doing it on a tablet doesn't feel right.
Have you tried it?
I tried once. But I just like the feel of the book in my yeah. hand, turn the pages. And
I totally agree, and I'm totally on board, and I've felt that way the whole time. And I've sort of read stuff on tablets before. Of course, I read news and newspapers or whatever websites, but I've been pleasantly surprised, and I don't want to feel that way because I want to be – I like having books on my nightstand. I don't want to have an iPad on my nightstand. I like having books there. I like holding a book in my hand. I like carrying a book. But I could see where if you're traveling, especially because you're going on a plane – and you got to carry some big heavy book, it's a pain in the butt. But having something on your iPad, God, it really is convenient. That's for sure.
And I can see that. Yeah, I could see that. That's definitely an advantage.
But it reads surprisingly well. But you called about weather, I believe. Is that true?
Yeah. Well, you know, with the East Coast, maybe this is the beginning of them having what we've had for decades.
What's that?
Just the miserable winters, the snow, the cold. I mean, look what we're getting. We're just getting like sub-zero cold and a little snow where they're just getting hammered. But I'm 53, so I remember 79 and snow up to your butt, and it was cold until March.
Yeah. Well, and the deep freeze of 83 and
right.
And all those things. Well, I don't know if people on the East Coast would say they've never had any of that. I think they historically don't get the snow that we tend to get. Although it's funny, Chris, you know, we're going back and forth. We've had... Wasn't it just last year, Raj, we had all the snow at Christmas and then nothing?
Yeah, it was a very mild winter.
And while President Trump tweeted how we need some more of this good old, we need some good old global warming to heat things up because it's been too cold, he's missing the point that people, you know, scientists will say it's not that it's going to get warm or it's going to get cold. It's that the everything's going to fluctuate like crazy. And down in Florida, they've had icicles on palm trees this week. And we're just seeing a lot more of the craziness, the strong hurricanes this year and this weird weather pattern. And, you know, whether you believe in the science or not, it does seem like the weather is changing, whether it's man-made or whatever you want to believe it is. The weather patterns do seem to be changing, and it seems like we're going to see more craziness more than anything, Chris. And maybe some winters that's going to mean 100 inches of snow, and maybe it means some winters we won't see anything at all.
I really think that it's like, well, let me say hi to Roger because he's a legend. So I'd like to.
Oh, my God.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
No.
This is how we're starting out the year, Chris.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you so much.
Oh,
but
God.
Wow, we need to bring you down a little bit. But thank you. That's I appreciate it.
But I really think that it's kind of tilting towards maybe we're not going to have the brutal winters we had that we've always remembered to where maybe now it's shifting to the East Coast to where. Like Orlando had frost in Disneyland.
Yeah.
They couldn't have rides. I mean, that's never happened before. So there's something to this. And for whatever his name is, who's our leader, says that
Tom
he doesn't
Skilling?
Believe in it.
Oh.
Yeah, no.
Because when it comes to weather, I thought you were talking about Tom Skilling, but I know where you're going now.
But yeah, I mean, for him to make jokes about it, it's serious. I mean, this is really happening. You could actually see this. There's more vicious hurricanes, there's vicious tornadoes. That's never been this way before.
Yeah,
so to
well,
sit there and say that this isn't happening is really ridiculous.
But that's where the people will say to you, Chris, you don't know that this hasn't happened before. And the great argument is we had an ice age, for goodness sake. So weather changes. It's crazy. But you're right. We're living through it now, and it does seem like it's getting much different, if not better or worse. Thank you, Chris, so much for the call. But, you know, Chris was saying that maybe we're not going to have these bad winters. I think we're going to have worse winters, but it might not be snow. I mean, look at this. When was the last time it was above freezing, Raj? It's been like
about three weeks.
3 weeks? Are you serious?
Yeah.
Since we've had 32 degrees?
Approximately.
Holy moly.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
Well, you've been frozen. Time stands still when you're frozen.
Man, I picked the wrong time to get a puppy.
I'll tell you this. Here's my you got a break for spots, but I saw this story some time ago, and I firmly believe that this is what's causing all this, not the not causing the global warming, because that is still a problem, even though the ozone hole in the ozone has been shrinking. Mm-hmm. But we still have issues. I just saw a report, a scientific report, about how the oceans are starting to lose oxygen. Excuse me. And a lot of the coral reefs are dying off, and a lot of the species of fish are dying off. But I firmly believe that there is a magnetic pole reversal, and there is history behind this.
Mm.
And I saw this report over a year ago, and I continue to go back on this. And this is why I think things are starting to look weird to us, because pole reversals don't happen every 100, 200, 300, 400 years. It's a lot longer in between, so nobody would have that history.
Does a pole reversal actually happen that has happened on Earth before?
Well,
and what does that even mean?
All right. So
does that mean my compass will point south instead of north?
No, I'm not sure, because, again, I'm still learning about this. But this is from John Tarduno, University of Rochester, and Vincent Hare, University of Rochester. The Earth is blanketed by magnetic field. It's what makes compasses point north, protects our atmosphere from continual bombardment from space by charged particles such as protons. Without a magnetic field, our atmosphere would slowly be stripped away by harmful radiation. Life would almost certainly not exist as it does today. That's a given. You might imagine magnetic field is a timeless, constant aspect of life on Earth, and to some extent you might be right, but Earth's magnetic field actually does change every so often, on the order of several hundred thousand years or so. The magnetic field has flipped. North has pointed south and vice versa. When the field flips, it also tends to become very weak. What currently has geophysicists like them abuzz, according to them, is the realization that the strength of Earth's magnetic field has been decreasing for the last 160 years at an alarming rate. The collapse is centered in a huge expanse of the southern hemisphere, extending from Zimbabwe to Chile, known as the South Atlantic Anomaly. Magnetic field strength is so weak that there is a hazard for satellites that orbit above the region. The field no longer protects them from radiation, which interferes with satellite electronics, etc., etc., etc. There's a long article here.
Sounds like it.
Yeah.
Okay, so that means if this is happening, our magnetic field is getting weaker, and that's going to make us – I have no idea what this means for the weather.
Well,
but does that make us susceptible for things crashing in from space?
Not necessarily. I think where it pertains to the weather, I think that our atmosphere could be affected by outside conditions, issues that we are not normally concerned about, because our magnetic field protects our atmosphere from outside influences above, out in space.
Hmm.
I'm not talking about asteroids crashing through or anything.
Right.
I'm talking about other protections, other issues that could cause oceans to move one way or the other, or could, in other words, affect the tides, or that could affect the temperatures. These are issues that I think scientists are looking at. I'm concerned about it because, again, this is a once in a 100,000 years, whatever, event.
And you'll be able to say you were here for it.
Well, I was here for the beginning of it. I don't know if I'll be around for the end of it.
Jess, let's look into this and see if in the next couple of weeks we can find a scientist over in Europe who can tell us a little bit about the idea of poles flipping. That's very fascinating. Okay,
yeah.
We're late for the news. We've got a guest coming up next, so let's take a quick break, and then we'll catch up with the headlines with Roger. 2:33 in the morning, we're going to check the news headlines. Then Sonia Van Meter, she's an opposition researcher. Chat with us a little bit. We'll see if she's read any of the Michael Wolff book yet. It does mention Apple Research early on and how Trump's team just kind of didn't bother with it because they didn't think they were going to win. We'll see what she thinks about that, as well as the midterms and Kristen Gillibrand she was tweeting about earlier today. We'll talk to her about all that after we check the headlines. Here's Roger. Matt Bobala with you here. 720 WGN 312-981-7200 is the number. Joining us on the phone right now is our friend Sonia Van Meter.
She is at Bourbon Face on Twitter. Hopes someday to be a Martian, but she's an opposition researcher based out of Texas. Where did I hear you? What's going on, Sonia? My producer just said you had a bad night tonight.
Dude, you're not going to believe this. I'm just now realizing that somebody broke into my car.
That sucks. At your house?
Dude, at my house. In front of my place, man.
That's the worst.
I know. Like, now, I will say this. It looks like the only thing they got are some really nice Ray-Bans that I totally love, and they were only a few months old. But, that's what's up.
So there's no, broken window, anything like that?
No, that's what's screwy. Like, I wondered, did I not lock my car door? Like, because the door was still open. Like, it was slightly ajar.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know what's going on. That's my night.
Now, are you sure that you weren't just in a rush to get home and you didn't quite close your door and maybe your Ray-Bans are inside on the kitchen table?
No, there's a couple other things. Like, I had a bag of clothes I was going to take to Goodwill in my back seat, and they are gone.
Man, the thing that stinks, so nothing bad happened. I mean, there's Ray-Bans that sucks. You got to spend money to replace those. But it's just the feeling of there's some jerk near me who maybe sees my house, whatever. That drives you insane.
Yep. And I mean, kind of a mess. Like, I opened up my glove compartment and threw out a bunch of stuff and kind of just spread trash.
Now, maybe you've been talking enough smack about the president that he's got people in black helicopters that are swinging by just to check up on you.
Dude, let me tell you something. the level of smack that I am talking and the frequency of smack that I'm talking does not merit the kind of black ops. Like, the president's got far bigger problems than me, let me tell you.
Well, maybe this wasn't a big black ops project. Maybe you just called some dude in Austin and said, hey, just swing by our house and rifle through the glove compartment, see what's going on. Stir her up a little bit.
Man. Well, I would like to think I'm that important.
He would have a lot of people doing a lot of that. That's how he's saving the economy, maybe.
Oh, is that what's going on? Okay, cool.
There'd be hundreds of thousands of jobs created just to, stir up trouble with the people that are causing him trouble. So let's get right into that. Did you read any of Michael Wolff's book yet?
Only the clips that made it onto the internet.
I downloaded it today because it was unavailable in the local bookstore, and I've read about 20% of it, and I find it fascinating. I wish Michael Wolff was a little different. As I see the interviews he does, I think he's hurting his own credibility a little bit, but it's a fascinating read.
Oh, it's glorious. Like, it's so juicy. I especially love the fact that there were certain, little satirical pieces that made it onto the internet that were supposed to be, excerpts from his book that were actually total fiction, like things that people were just making up. And they were so outrageous and so ridiculous. And yet we were still kind of like, I don't know. I mean, it could be that Trump really, really loves watching gorillas fight each other on TV. And people believed it. Like, we are so deep into, we're so far through the looking glass that we don't know what to believe anymore.
For people that aren't familiar with this, I saw this online earlier tonight. Somebody wrote, was it a guy from The New Yorker who wrote the parody piece? Do you remember?
Oh, I don't know. So I have no idea.
Somebody wrote a parody piece. I caught it when he apologized for it and said, boy, now I'm part of the problem because people believe this. He wrote a parody that it was an excerpt from the book that Trump wanted. It was like his first night in the White House or whatever, was upset that they weren't getting the Gorilla Channel. Where's the Gorilla Channel? So aides quickly pasted together a bunch of different movies or gorilla shows, and then from a transmitter on the South Lawn beamed the Gorilla Channel into his room, after which he got upset that there wasn't enough fighting. Now, what's funny about this, though, Sonia, is that then I saw another story. Somebody came out later tonight, I think, and said, while that is funny and amusing, here's a true story that they were traveling with Trump on a plane. I don't think it was Air Force One, but they started screening some movie. I don't know what it was, but probably a more serious movie. After 20 minutes, Trump was bored. So they put in a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie, and he made, I think it was Bloodsport. And then he made one of his sons keep fast forwarding to the fighting so he could cut the 2-hour movie down to about 45 minutes. And that's not that much different than the gorilla story.
It's really not, we don't know what to believe anymore. I can't believe this is the universe that we're living in.
Well, it's fascinating. So whether you love or hate Trump,
And I know the people that love Trump are not going to believe a word of the book and just be upset about it. But it is a fascinating insight just into take Trump out of it. All the other people in the circles and they're battling for their positions. And the whole first part of the book is how everybody was positioning themselves for their jobs after this was over because nobody believed they were actually going to win except for Steve Bannon. He's the only one that kept saying, we're going to win this thing. It's fascinating. We'll talk more about it later. I want to ask you about you tweeted earlier tonight about Kristen Gillibrand. There was a story. I forget if it was I was just reading. I think the Daily Beast or somebody did a story about is she hurting her chances for 2020? And you wrote something along the lines of is this what we're really going to start doing? Was that about were you calling them out on it being a female candidate or why were you taking umbrage with their writing about Kristen?
I believe it was a comment to the effect of she is too opportunist, which is something that we loved. We did it for years to Hillary Clinton. It was about her being too hungry, too ambitious, and something that we love to do to women running for major office. You know, we see it really frequently. We've seen these arguments about Kamala. We've seen these arguments about Elizabeth Warren. And you know what? In this era of Me Too, in this time where we're seeing women really come forward and talk about, you know, what their experience is like in politics, in the real world, in their everyday lives, I am absolutely 1,000% done with dude bro journalists talking about women as though they're asking for something that they don't deserve.
Okay, now... I didn't read the whole piece. Well, I didn't read the whole piece, but they also mentioned Mitt Romney and John Kerry as people in a similar vein who do these type of things. I mean, the story is about how she championed her NRA connections at a time. Did she rush too fast to push Al Franken out of the Senate? I mean, there is a thing. If we take sex out of it, let's take sex out of it just for a minute. I understand you being upset about because of the way women and because of what Hillary faced. If we take sex out of it and it's just a political candidate who, you know, there is such a thing, absolutely, I think you would agree, of candidates who jump on opportunity too quickly and maybe then alienate people or maybe you would say, hey, those guys get elected all the time. That's just how it is. Or would you say there is an issue for candidates who do things like that, who, you know, on the one hand are touting their NRA connections, but then when it's not as beneficial to them are doing something on the opposite end?
My issue is that you don't see stories written. You don't see think pieces written about dudes being opportunistic. The word that they use to describe those dudes is aggressive, you know, or calculating, perhaps. It's always women. It's always women being attacked for being opportunistic. You know, wasn't Mitt Romney in the headline? It was her.
Yeah. Well, because Mitt Romney's like, done, though, right? I mean, we're not talking about Mitt Romney in 2020. So if it was...
Buddy, I don't know. Here's the thing, though. Running for political office is all about the opportunity. Like, that's the whole point.
Right.
I'm tired of it, man. I'm really like it smacked so hard of the same nonsense we saw thrown at Hillary Clinton about how oh she's just power hungry, she's just getting greedy for man. Where did those stories have all been written? You know, write something new. You know, wow, did she jump a little bit early on calling for Franken's resignation? I mean, those are stories that I'm willing to entertain and listen to and debate, you know.
What do you think? I totally understand. I totally get it. Let's talk about Al Franken for a minute. Not Kristen's role in it, but just the whole him resigning as quickly as he did, him saying at first, I want an ethics investigation. I embrace that. And then deciding to resign as he lost Democratic support, not just among Kristen, but among many male Democrats as well. Dick Durbin called on him to resign here in Illinois. A lot of them came down heavy on him. What do you think about that? Did the Democrats... Was that the right thing to do, and was it the smart thing to do politically?
Ooh, that is a multi-layered question right there. On the one hand, you know, speaking as a Democratic operative, you know, and particularly as a woman, part of me wants to say that, yes, you know, we need to be the kind of party that lives and breathes its own values. We can't talk about being a party for women, the party of women, if we're not, you know, taking seriously the rights and safety of women. On the other hand, you know, the political strategist in me, you know, kind of cringes a little bit because, you know, that's a seat that we need. And Franken legislatively has been a champion for women. And that's not to say that you can't advocate for women at the ballot box and in the halls of Congress and not still be, you know, a jerk, a misogynistic jerk in your private life. But, you know, I'd be lying if I said that, you know, I'm not conflicted about this. I mean, there's a lot yeah. going on here. So, you know, I don't fault anyone for thinking what they do. I have a lot of people who are adamant that this was the right thing, that he needed to go. I've got a lot of friends who, you know, loved him, who worked with him, who saw him champion women's causes in the Senate and are sad to see this to go down the way that it did. And I'm not going to tell anybody they're wrong.
Yeah, it's I would think it's really tough because, like you said, he did champion women's causes. And if the Democrats then lose that seat, theoretically, that hurts women's causes, at least from the Democratic side. So it's a very tough one. You know, Matt Damon has gotten himself in a lot of trouble trying to parse the differences in behavior among men who have behaved badly. And Al Franken is one of the ones where you'd say, all right, that was really stupid. That was really sophomoric. Should there be a dividing line or some sort of degree of what people have done and how much trouble that gets them into? And, because when you say, if Democrats are going to fight this cause, it's the Michelle Obama, they go low, we go high. So if one of our people did it, they should be forced out. But at the same time, that seems to be how Republicans keep winning these battles. Now, Roy Moore did lose. And I was stunned. I thought I would have bet the house that he was going to win that election. That was a huge surprise that night. But outside of that, it seems like Democrats or Michelle Obama's proclamation, when they go low, we go high, keeps backfiring on Democrats. Maybe that was the turning of the tide and maybe it will pay off in the end. But do you sometimes worry that Democrats don't fight hard enough and don't fight back hard enough, that taking the high road, while in theory is the right thing to do, isn't the thing that works out best for the team?
That's another multi-layer.
I'm very multi-layered tonight, Sonia. I'm making this difficult on you, I know. Very multi-layered. 2018, more layers.
Hey, let me tell you something. I appreciate it. You know, like a nuanced discussion is you know, after a year of this White House, anything resembling nuance, I'm a huge fan of. You know, so, like, not everything is black and white, and I appreciate that. You know, it's that's a tough question. To your concern that the Democrats don't fight hard enough. The funny thing is that I believe that we do fight hard enough. We just don't necessarily fight smart enough. Mm. You know, in terms of, you know, getting rid of a guy like Al Franken, you know, that's a, you know, it's a complicated issue for sure. On the other hand, I think Doug Jones won precisely because the Democrats fought the kind of fight that we needed to fight, and stood fast on certain values that you can't turn your back on if you really believe in them, you know? So given the climate and given everything that has happened so far, the simultaneous Donald Trump era happening with the Me Too uprising, I think that more often than not, this is going to play to Democrats' advantage. It's hard. It's hard to live your values when it can potentially sacrifice you seats. But I think that, you know, I'm going to go ahead and say this. So I have this theory, right? We need our next Jimmy Carter. We're looking for politicians who are decent. We are so sick and so grossed out by so much of the scandal coming out of this White House that I think people who are just straight up good human beings are going to go really, really, really far in 18. Now, for the most part, that's going to mean Democrats because, you know, unfortunately, Republicans are having the kind of two-party line and, you know, the leader of their party is their president right now. For better or for worse for them. But I think, you know, in 18 and even in 20, the Democrats walking the walk and living the sort of, you know, party line truth is going to work out really, really well. And I mean, of course, I thought I was, you know, I thought I knew what I was talking about in 16. So you don't necessarily want to take my word for it.
Well, everybody seemed to miscalculate that one, even the people that are sitting in the White House right now. So we have to, everybody gets a mulligan for that one, I guess. As we start looking ahead to the midterms coming up this year, where do you see things at right now? The Democrats currently with Doug Jones taking over that Senate seat, or it's a what, 51-49 now, right? Or is it 50? How does it 50-49-1? How is it working exactly right now? Because it was 50.
51. It's, yeah, I believe it's 51-49.
So it's two mm-hmm. votes, but it's one. If one flipped, it would change things. But the Democrats have some tough seats up, including Al Franken's seat, which will be up for election again, and some other ones. They only need two, but I think you have some tough races to defend. And in the House, it's a decent amount that Democrats have to make up. So how are things looking right now as far as the candidates that are out there? You said that good people will go a long way. How easy is it to get those people to jump into the idea of running for public office? Because it is a tough game these days.
It is a tough game these days, but I'll tell you what, if Donald Trump has done anything for the Democratic Party, it's that he's galvanized us completely. So, first of all, and here I am in Texas, so we'll talk about Texas. For the first time in, I think, 20 years, we have competitive races in all of our congressional districts. There have been places where we didn't even have a Democrat on the ballot. And all of a sudden, we have competitive primaries in every single congressional district in the state. It's been years since that happened, and we're seeing that all over the country. People are stepping up to run. People are exhausted. They're upset. They're motivated. They're energized. And they're raising money. They're out there getting their message out. And I mean, clearly, the tide is in the Democrats. And the nice thing is that it's not just politician types running anymore. You know, usually we get a sea of lawyers and business executives and such. Now all of a sudden we've got doctors running. We've got accountants running. We've got teachers running. You know, you've got public personalities and radio DJs running, FYI. We've got this huge variety of people with all kinds of experience from all walks of life running for office. The other thing I'm really excited about, and I'm sure other people will confirm this, Emily's List, you know, the organization that likes to fund and back pro-choice Democratic women, saw a crush of interest right after the election. They have a website where you can go if you're interested in running for office and you're a woman. There's a you know, get more information, contact us, let us know website where you go, you fill in some information. They're used to getting, you know, 20 or so a month. Their website crashed in the week after the election because so many women were interested in running at all levels. It was local, it was statewide, it was federal. And you know, they only back Democratic women. So, you know, there's been this massive crush of Democratic talent where in times before, you know, our bench has been a little bit lacking.
Well, do you know that? So that was right after the election, a crush of interest. Has that panned out to mean that women are running in greater numbers in 2018? Do you expect to see women running? You know, I know I can't get too deep into local and state races, of course, but on a national level, do you expect to see really competitive races with a lot more women than you normally see?
Absolutely. As a political consultant myself, for the first time in my life, I am working for just as many female candidates as I am male candidates, and that's never happened before.
Yeah, I believe it. So
we're coming up, baby.
All right, Sonia, I know it's late and I know you just had your car broken into, but we got to do the news. Can you hang on a few more minutes? Because I really want to get your opinion on something I've been saying for a while, and that's the debate over whether President Trump ever leaves office and what happens if he does and how the Democrats would feel about that. Can you hang on just for a few?
Absolutely. Let's do this.
All right. Sonia is going to straighten out her glove compartment while she waits. We'll take a quick break and then get Roger's news headlines. And then we'll chat more with Sonia Van Meter at Bourbon Face on Twitter. A worthwhile follow. That's coming up next. 720 WGN. It's the Matt Bubala Show. 720 WGN. Sonia Van Meter, Bourbon Face on Twitter.
is a Democratic opposition researcher. She's been kind enough to stick on the phone with us a little while longer. Sonia, I know your car got broken into tonight, but I don't know if you just heard the weather report. It's zero here right now. Zero.
You know, I did hear that. That's terrifying. That is terrifying.
So maybe our cars are in one piece, but it's zero. So there's that.
Yeah, no. I will never again complain about my situation. Like, I lost some Ray-Bans, and that sucks, but, like, I'm not frozen, and it's fine.
Yes, so you've got that going for you, so that's good.
All right.
I want to ask you about this. I've had a theory that I've talked about a little bit on the show, because there's been a lot of talk about the 25th Amendment or Russian collusion or what's going to happen with the Mueller investigation, yada, 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 and about Trump ever leaving office. And my theory is that Democrats do not want him to leave office. Doug Jones might have only won because Trump is in office. The 2018 midterms are going to theoretically be helped by Trump being in office. And the other problem is, if Trump leaves office, Mike Pence takes over, who is a nightmare for Democrats policy-wise, but also is going to run probably a more orderly White House and bring back a sense of government that might actually get him reelected, or at least get a lot more legislation passed on an agenda that Democrats really don't want. I think the best thing for Democrats is for Donald Trump to be in office as long as possible.
I mean, that's one theory for sure. And as we've talked about tonight, like, Donald Trump has done a lot for Democrats in terms of, you know, just being the gift that keeps on giving. You know, every time he opens his mouth, we can fundraise. Any policy position he has, you know, we can fundraise on that, and we can motivate voters with that. But you know, the other thing is, and I don't like, I know that it's really easy to get cynical in a time like this, but I mean, while he does motivate and galvanize the other side of the aisle, he's also, I mean, this is straight up dangerous territory for us as a country. You know, the scandals are fun, and it's easy to laugh at and sort of point and roll your eyes at certain things. But at the end of the day, we're still talking about a White House and an executive branch that is so open to attack from enemies, both foreign and domestic. And I don't mean to be alarmist about this, but we're talking about an administration that has no idea what it's doing. And the way that they carry out their business, you know, out in front of people, he's talking shop at Mar-a-Lago, moving from table to table, talking about national security and talking about foreign policy and talking about his domestic agenda in conversations that should be happening behind closed doors. We are, I don't think we've ever been as vulnerable to our enemies as we are right now. And so, yes, from a political standpoint, I think Democrats do benefit from having him in office. But at the same time, I can't feel like a patriot with the situation that we're in. Like, there's something about having him here that makes me fear for my country in a way that I had never feared for my country before. You know, George H.W., any Republican leadership we've ever had before, I had never felt that they didn't have the best interest of the country at heart. For the first time in my life, I feel that way. So, and I think a lot of Democrats feel that way. I think that's part of the reason that everyone is so motivated to run, and that we're talking about 2020 so early, and we're feeling such a huge candidate pool for 2020. So yes and no. You know, as with everything else we've talked about tonight, you know, there's kind of two sides to it.
Yeah.
Mike Pence is terrifying to me personally from a political perspective, sure. And I think he would run a much more orderly White House. But I think from a policy perspective, he is even more dangerous than Trump, just because I think he would be more effective at having legislation passed. There's not that level of fear. There's not that component of chaos to him. On the other hand, and this is very insider baseball, I know, his colleagues, who, you know, people who have worked with him before, say that he's not especially a smart guy, a smart man. Apparently, his nickname for a really, really long time was Mike Dent. So perhaps he's not the great strategic threat that some people sort of thing.
Well, here's the thing, though, Sonia, and here's the big difference, I would guess, especially as I'm reading the beginning of this book, and I think you would agree with this, that maybe the biggest mistake, and maybe not, people who defend Trump would probably argue against this, but his whole mantra was, I'm going to drain the swamp. And so he comes in, surrounds himself by family, surrounds himself with kind of outsiders, doesn't let people who truly know what they're doing run the show. They write about Henry Kissinger placing a lot of calls to give advice. And it's like, get somebody who really knows what they're doing, get somebody as chief of staff who really knows what they're doing. And instead, he kind of, you know, he wanted one of his real estate buddies to be chief of staff and really tried to get him. And the guy's like, dude, I'm just too rich. I can't untangle myself. I don't want to do this. And so, you know, everything is kind of bounced around in there. And while in some ways you're going to argue he didn't drain the swamp, look at Betsy DeVos and all these people, he's just bringing in a different swamp. He has not surrounded himself with people who knew Washington enough to help him really get things done. And while you might say, oh, Pence, he doesn't really know what he's doing. He was a governor of a state. He ran a state, whether the state likes that or not. Now he's you know, a heartbeat away. And theoretically, at least, he would surround himself by the right people and he would work with the Republican Party, not just throw Twitter jabs at him at 3 a.m. And so whether he's smart or not, you could argue, but he's going to have everything in place to get things done if they don't, in 2018, lose control of the houses.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, there's absolutely something to that. You know, by comparison, Pence is an incredibly disciplined individual. And you're right. I mean, Trump, you know, he led on the premise of I'm gonna drain the swamp, and instead he just made it thicker and higher and deeper. But part of the problem is that right now we're living in such an era of chaos that it's really kind of hard to speculate at this point. And I say that as a person who is, you know, it's my job to speculate for a living. I feel like this is all so chaotic, and that we're sort of like in the movies where you see something happens and it skews the timeline. We're now living in this weird sort of alternate timeline. So from here on out, I feel like it's sort of anyone's guess. But I mean, maybe you're right. Maybe he is the bigger threat. But at this point, I gotta think that Trump has done so much to tarnish the Republican brand that Democrats in 18 and 20 are going to see massive, massive gains. And hopefully that means the White House.
Well, and generally you do see massive gains 2 years after a president takes, right? I mean, I believe for President Obama, I believe for President Clinton, I'm going to guess for the Bushes, that they take office with control. 2 years later, generally you lose control. That is the trend, right?
Yep, absolutely. Big time.
So theoretically that would happen anyways, at least Democrats would make gains. Now, they have a long way to go to gain control of the House. Do you think that can be done in 2018?
Okay, again, you're asking me to predict, and like all
yes.
I can think of is how I thought I was so right in 16 and I could not have been more wrong.
Well, you don't even have to predict whether it's going to happen, but just tell me, I think isn't it 35 seats in the House that they would have to flip?
Yeah, it's more than that.
Something around there, something in the high 30s. So that's a large amount. Just looking at the races right now, in the ones they have to defend and the ones they have to gain, theoretically, is it? Yeah, we're pretty. You know, I know you're not saying, hey, it's definitely going to happen, but are they at least looking competitive in enough of those races where, if you put it all on the board, yeah, there's scenarios where the Democrats do gain control.
Yes, I think it's possible. I don't want to get too ahead of myself. I've had misplaced optimism before, and I can't bear another heartbreak the way that I did in 16. But yes, it's absolutely doable. I mean, the PDIs are swinging like crazy all over the country. You know, districts that used to be hard right are now lean right. Districts that used to be lean right are now, you know, toss up. Talked about, you know, we've seen a lot of competitive races in terms of the Democratic primaries. It's no longer, oh, here's the sacrificial lamb for this district. Here's the person we're going to put on the ballot just so we have someone. Now we've got competitive primaries with real, with really talented candidates, people with lots of experience, lots of interesting, useful, varied experience, bringing all kinds of stories to Congress. I think if ever there was a year for us to really overperform, I think it's probably 18. So So, you know, I'm not saying quote me on that because, like I said, I've been wrong before. But all signs point to this is going to be a crushing year for Democrats in the good way. So.
And the crazy thing is it's in 2018. We're already in 2018. So we're only like 9 months away.
You got it.
Or so from things really, I mean, we're going to start seeing ads soon. We're really going to start hearing about this. This year is going to be pretty full of politics, isn't it? Is the money being raised going to be at record levels? Are you seeing money pouring into Democrats and the Democratic National Committee at record rates?
Absolutely. It's already at record rates, and it's just going to get better and better, I believe, going forward. And the great thing is that even like relative to Republican spending, Republicans are not raising money. There is not the enthusiasm on that side of the aisle. There are certain pockets where, of course, they're always going to do well. But nationally, the Democratic candidates are absolutely crushing it on fundraising. It's been really, really exciting to watch. Even with these Democratic primaries where there's multiple candidates running. And I know the Democratic donors are super tapped out right now. But the great thing is that we're no longer relying on the major, major donors. Grassroots donations are coming in, like a flood. It's been great to watch, and I'm really excited to see what these candidates how these candidates are able to compete and how they're able to get their message out with all this ad money behind them. It's gonna be fun. It's gonna be rowdy.
Ron is in Michigan. He dialed 312-981-7200. Ron, you got a comment for Sonia?
Yes, I do, Matt. It's below Sonia. Sonia, it doesn't make any difference, in my opinion, if we have the smartest candidate or the most, as long as that fan base, which is what we have with Trump, and it's loyal, and they come out and they vote. We had allegedly the smartest guy in office, President Obama. He had that 2-year window. He should have rammed everything through. The 160 judges now that Trump gets to pick. The infrastructure, ram it all through. But he wanted to play kumbaya. He wanted to play kumbaya. He wanted to make friends. And now what do we have? Anything that Obama has put in office is legislation. It's going to be dust. Everything except the medical thing. The 160 judges, it's unthinkable. He didn't lead our party. He led the party from the back. He didn't support unions, his main supporters. When the teachers union was out on strike, he didn't back them. He didn't get anything for Illinois. He didn't get an airport. We don't need a smart guy. We need a guy who's tough. And who can bring in the base. That's what we need. Obama was an utter failure. He was the best.
Whoops. All right. I just screwed up. I'm so sorry, Ron. I just screwed up. Sonia had gotten cut off. I just put her back on. I accidentally hung up on Ron while I did that. I didn't mean to do that. But Sonia, Ron, I apologize about that. I think you heard what he was saying, is that while you can say, oh, we've got the smarter people, we've got all this momentum, he says in the end, Trump has his base and he gets what he wants. And he believes that President Obama really blew his opportunity when he had control while he did. Your thoughts?
I think there's probably something to that. But I think, as we've talked about, like that's sort of something that happens to every president. You get elected, you get swept into office, because you say the things that people want to hear, and then, you have to play it safe. You kind of marshal your capital and utilize it where you can. I mean, Obama used his capital to push Obamacare through. And then after that, we had the massive brush, swing back. From Republican voters 2 years later. There's a question of, you know, what you do with the office once you get it. And I think in a lot of cases, he's absolutely right. You know, it doesn't matter if you have the stronger or the smarter or the better candidate. It's what do voters want right now? What are they feeling? And there's always going to be races where you have a massive nincompoop win over some of the most qualified people in the room. 2016 White House. Perfect example of this, picture-perfect example of this. And every once in a while, as a political consultant, I'm not going to lie to you, like, I feel like every once in a while I wonder, like, does what I do matter? Like, are the voters going to vote for the person that they feel like better represents them, given the time and the circumstance and the situation that they're in? But at the end of the day, sometimes it's, you get into office, you do what you can, and... You know, sometimes the voters like it and sometimes they don't.
Yeah. Well, speaking,
we'll see.
Rich brought up Barack Obama. So let me ask you, as we head into 2018, how involved do you hope President Obama or Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders are in pushing candidates? Should they take a step back or should they be front and center trying to help out?
I think that Hillary and Bernie need to step all the way back. Take all the seats, ladies and gentlemen. And you know I love me some Hillary. She is my girl, ride or die for life. I am with her. But at this point, it's time for the next generation to get in there and do their thing. And I got to say the same thing for Bernie. I know that there's a lot of fervor behind the enthusiasm for him. But the man is 140 years old. You know, he's been in the Senate for longer than I've been alive. It's time for the new blood. I think there are certain pockets of the country where a Bernie endorsement would probably be useful. I think that's probably the same for Hillary, but she's a more polarizing figure. I know. To be quite frank, I think this is not a time to bring back the relics of the past age. We're in the new timeline. You know, it's time for the new blood. Just my thoughts.
And so in 2020, then you fully expect that neither Hillary nor Bernie will try again, correct?
No, I think Bernie will absolutely try again. I think Hillary is done. I do. Oh, absolutely. I think he got a taste and I think he wants more. And there's going to be a lot of people around him right now telling him, oh, absolutely, you should absolutely run. This is your time. This is your year. I think Hillary is flat out done. I think it would. I can't fathom what it would take to convince her to run again. And I think she's earned a little peace and quiet at this point. I think she needs to hang out in Chappaqua and play with her grandkids and just read some good books for a while. I think that she has earned some time off. She has served her country extraordinarily. I can't imagine what it would take to convince her to run again. But Bernie, no, I think the fervor is still there. I think he's still feeling it. And how it is with candidates. I mean, you're constantly surrounded by people that believe in you and want you to run, and you hear that all the time, relentlessly. I think we're absolutely going to see Bernie on the ballot again in 2020.
And what about Joe Biden?
No idea, to tell you the truth. I know he's expressed some regret about not running in 16. But I also know that, his life has been tough, the last few years with the loss of his son. Yeah. And, he's not exactly a spring chicken anymore. And when I was talking before about, the old guard needing to step aside and make room for the new guard, I think Joe Biden, I think he falls in the glory.
Do you think Chelsea Clinton will ever start dipping her toes into politics? She's very good on Twitter. She's very good at fighting back with the trolls and just with, having great Twitter exchanges. I've really come to love Chelsea Clinton. And as crazy as that is, say, hey, how about a different Clinton running for office? I wonder if she would ever have the desire to do that.
I wouldn't fault her if she did. Clearly her entire family, has the gift, for public service. Say what you will about the Clintons, but they got a lot done for this country. They were, progressive together. I can't speak for Chelsea. And you're right. She does have some really, really great Twitter game. But I also think that the country is a little done with dynasties. Unless she turns out to, and I think she is charismatic. I think she is a great leader, and I would love to see her run. But I think that she's got her father's political savvy, and probably recognizes that her experience running for office is probably going to be more like her mother's than her father's. And I don't know why anyone would want to subject themselves to that.
Well, and I wonder, too, Bill Clinton, would he have survived the Me Too moment? Somehow Trump survives everything, so he did. Although it'd be interesting if the election and the Billy Bush tape had come out 1 year later, would Trump have survived that election? He deflected it at the time, but there wasn't the national movement that is going on right now. And maybe the national movement wouldn't have come to light had it not been for Trump being in office. I don't know. But I wonder how Bill Clinton as a politician would fare today with all the baggage he had around himself.
Oh, I think he'd be toast.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I don't think he would have survived that at all. And that's, you know, that's unfortunately a blight that Democrats are going to have to sort of live with for years to come. We were so quick to turn a blind eye and to sort of, you know, sweep that under the rug and ignore it. And that's, you know, that was a failing on our part. But Trump is different. You know, in order to be taken down by something like this, you have to have a sense of shame. I think that Bill Clinton does. And I think that Trump is just not wired that way.
I do.
Absolutely.
I don't know. He fought. I mean, you remember when it was all coming out and he just fought and he lied to the people saying, you know, pounding his fist on that lectern, I did not have a relationship. And I know he's saying it was none of their business and that at the time, but I don't think he would have gone quietly like Al Franken. I think he would have stayed around like Donald Trump. But
No. I don't think he would have gone quietly. I think he would have gone down kicking and screaming. But I think that I don't think he would have survived that particular scandal in the Me Too era.
Well,
I think it would have been a blaze of glory for sure, but I don't think he ever survived.
So who is the next rising star in the Democratic Party? Is it Kamala Harris? Is it Cory Booker? Do we have somebody that we know right now, or is it a name that isn't a household name yet that's going to rise?
You know what? There are just so many people that are being talked about in terms of 2020 that it's really hard to say who the next great leader is going to be. I love Kamala. I think she's wonderful. I'm looking forward to seeing what she does. But I'm also interested in some of these other candidates, these sort of lower profile candidates who made a bit of noise in 16 and spent the next couple of years building their profiles a bit. South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg, love that guy. Really great mayor, gay man. He ran for DNC chair. Like he's been making the rounds. He's been on the circuit talking about progressive values and what this country is great at and kind of getting back to the Democratic roots. And Jason Kander's been making some noise. He's been doing the circuit. I know there's been some buzz about Eric Garcetti, mayor of LA. There are a lot of people, kind of in the buzz that I think could easily step up. And those are just the ones that I've heard of. I mean, there's, I'm sure there are more that are coming down the pipeline that I haven't, I'm not seeing yet.
So the next superstar might not be out there just yet.
Might not be.
Well, it's going to be an interesting year, Sonia. I hope we can do this again. I hope under better circumstances. I know you'll be warm, but hopefully your car will be secure next time we chat. I really appreciate you staying up late with us. It's always fun to talk to you. Follow Sonia Van Meter on Twitter at Bourbon Faces or anywhere else you want people to connect with you, Sonia?
No, that's my jam, Twitter.
All right. Sounds good. We'll follow you there. Thanks so much for being on as always.
Thank you.
All right. Sonia Van Meter at Bourbon Face. Give her a follow on Twitter. We'll talk to her again. It's going to be an exciting year ahead. News next on 720 WGN. Matt Bobala with you here, 720 WJN. 312-981-7200. Sonia Van Meter with us for the last hour. 608 writes, we're discussing dinosaurs. Why can't the Democrats, and I'm one, find some young potential rising stars like Bill Clinton when he was young? Well, I think Sonia said she thinks they're out there. Maybe we just don't know them as of yet. Kamala Harris, I think, could be one of them. Cory Booker, they all seem to end up running into their own baggage. I think that could be because they're going to have baggage. It could be because everybody's out to get each other these days. And whoever's a rising star, people will find baggage as quickly as possible. A lot has been talked about on Friday and will continue to be about the book Fire and Fury by Michael Wolff. It started because Michael Wolff, reporter who was writing for The Hollywood Reporter, wrote a piece on Trump that wasn't completely flattering, but the Trump campaign liked. And they ended up giving him a lot of access. He didn't have access to to President Trump all the time. He states in the Today Show interview that he had about 3 hours in total with President Trump, but was around the people who were around him all the time. And I read a tweet from somebody, I can't remember who now, who's either a reporter or was on a White House staff, but they tweeted that they remember seeing him in the hallways all the time and saying to him something like, "What the hell are you doing here?" And he said, "I have no idea, and I don't think they do either." It's sort of like they gave him this access. Nobody, he said, he stated something like, nobody knew to say yes or to say no, so I just got to sort of be a fly on the wall. And he was around all these things. He did a Today Show interview. I believe it was on Thursday morning. Let's see. Was it on? Was it just Friday morning? I think it was Thursday morning. I'm not sure. In the last 2 days, he did a Today Show interview about the book. Maybe it was Friday morning because the book just came out on Friday. And he sounded a little too cavalier for my liking. I'd like him to sound a little more presidential himself in the fact that he wrote this book. He is enjoying, certainly, that President Trump is giving such a hard time about it. Jess has four different cuts from the interview. Let's go ahead and listen to one of them. Jess, go ahead.
Not only is he helping me sell books, but he's helping me prove the point of the book. I mean, this is extraordinary that a president of the United States would try to stop the publication of a book. This doesn't happen, has not happened from other presidents, would not even happen from a CEO of a mid-sized company.
And like the guys were saying at the end of Patty's show, probably not the tack that Donald Trump really truly wanted to take. Now, Donald Trump is a fighter, and you got to give him that. That's for sure. So he's out there fighting, saying, hey, we're going to sue. We're going to halt the publication. Just driving way more interest in this book than there needed to be. He did not help himself in this instance in being how he is. Go ahead next, Jess.
I absolutely spoke to the president, whether he realized it was an interview or not. I don't know, but it certainly was not off the record.
That's in response to, you know, President Trump kind of dismissing how much access he had. Go ahead, Jess.
I spoke to him after the inauguration, yes. And I had spoken to, I mean, I've spent about 3 hours with the president over the course of the campaign in the White House. So my window into Donald Trump is pretty significant. But even more to the point, and this was really sort of the point of the book, I spoke to people who spoke to the president on a daily, sometimes minute-by-minute basis.
Now, 3 hours total, and I don't know how many months he was around the White House and around the campaign, but he said a significant window into Donald Trump or something like that he said there. I don't know that 3 hours is significant. I mean, Howard Stern has spent a hell of a lot more time with Donald Trump than Michael Wolff has. And I know that wasn't his president, but there are people who have way more insight into Donald Trump. I'm sure there are other reporters who've spent way more than 3 hours with him altogether. And so I don't know if he's a little overplaying how much access he had there. You know what I mean? He's helping his detractors, I think, give him a hard time about whether he's conflating how much access he had, what he really knows. Just has one more cut.
You know, I think one of the things we have to count on is that Donald Trump will attack. He will send lawyers letters. This is a 35-year history of how he approaches everything.
And that is very true. There was a story I saw earlier today, or maybe just a tweet, listing all the different times, I think since he started his campaign, that President Trump has threatened to sue somebody over something they wrote or something they said. There was a list of, I think, 10, and he never sued anybody. But he always, that's kind of a mantra of his, threaten to sue and try to get your way. And so, of course, he does that. But now he's on this stage where it's easier for people to call his bluff on that. And a big publisher standing to make millions of dollars and knowing the free speech laws is not going to not publish that book. That's for sure. Publishers have been through this before with celebrities. They know how this works. They know what the laws are and what they can get away with and what they can't. And unless there was something really egregious in that book, there's no way they're going to pull that book. President Trump said he was going to change those libel laws, and I'm sure he's wishing more than ever now that he had. I want to play one more cut that I have on my computer here, because Savannah Guthrie was doing the interview, and she kept pressing him because President Trump came out pretty hard on him, whether this was fake and this the made-up stories, etc. So she really tried to push him on this. And one of the guys mentioned at the end of Patty's show, you know, he said he's got it all on tape. He sort of says that. Let me see if that's this part right here.
Trump. And I want to get to the substance, what you've written in the book in a moment. But just to clear this up, because the president is saying it's full of lies, that you didn't have the access you said you had.
You know, I think one of the things we have to count on is that Donald Trump will attack. He will send lawyers letters. This is a 35-year history of how he approaches everything.
Do you have recordings of some of these interviews and some of these conversations?
Well, I work like every journalist works. So I have recordings. I have notes. I am certainly and absolutely in every way comfortable with everything I've reported in this book.
Would you release any of those recordings since your credibility is being questioned?
My credibility is being questioned by a man who has less credibility than perhaps anyone who has ever walked on earth at this point.
Before I leave it, I will say the president, the tweet alludes to, quote, your past. It says, I assume referring to a profile about you in 2004 in the New Republic, the reporter said of you, the scenes in your writing aren't recreated so much as created, springing from Wolf's imagination rather than actual
I've written many books. I've written millions upon millions of words. I don't think there has ever been one correction.
So you stand by everything in the book, nothing made up?
Absolutely everything in the book.
Let's
Okay. So, while he says he has tapes, he keeps jumping on her questions in a way that makes me feel like he's awfully defensive for somebody being asked about this. If you have this book out and you know you've got to defend your credibility, I think you let that question just come out and then you say, of course, I have recordings. I'll be happy to, you know, they'll be part of an audiobook at a later time. We're not just going to give them away, but there's going to be an extra fee for that, whatever. But he's sort of, you know, like any reporter, I have recordings, I have my notes. So what do you have recordings of and what do you just have notes of?
Yeah,
you know,
that's, when
that
he answered
that. Can
be
parsed down a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. When he answered that, when he said, like any reporter. Well, you shouldn't have to say like any reporter.
Yeah.
You should say, I have the recordings and I stand by them and I will supply them when necessary.
And I wish she had a better answer to the question about the story that was done on him in the New Republic. I think she said like in 2004, so that's a long time ago. But he just, you know, well, I've written millions of words and never one correction.
Yeah.
Well, all right, then why did they write
that
article? What's that about?
Yeah.
Well, listen, I was writing for things that were more fanciful at the time, but everything is accurate. Maybe my descriptions are too colorful for that person's taste. That was one man's opinion. But I haven't had a correction in millions of, you know, give me a little more, you know, convince me a little more.
Yeah.
And instead, he's attacking the president, which, listen, Donald has earned. That's what he does. Donald goes on the attack. And so he's like, hey, I'm being attacked by somebody with less credibility than anybody else. All right. Well, that's not the game you're playing. You're writing about a president. You have to. It's a fair question to, you know, especially because a lot of it's on deep background and a lot of it's on condition of anonymity. There are going to be these questions. So you've got to answer them, and you need to be a little more forthcoming.
Plus, I think the publication he's writing for kind of calls into question his authenticity. If you usually hear this kind of a story coming from New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, Chicago Tribune, L.A. Times, those kinds of papers that have the resources and wherewithal and the reporters, the seasoned reporters, political reporters, to write these kinds of stories,
He was writing a book.
Well,
so,
right, but
you know, they had allowed him to be there. Yeah. The White House gave him access.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what hurts them. They let him be there. And they did it, I don't know if you heard this story, because of a piece he wrote for the Hollywood Reporter.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
About Trump, which seems silly, but they liked it. So they said, yeah, you can hang out more. And suddenly he's there. And, you know, in the craziness of the start of the Trump administration, when, you know, he's the outsider candidate, so he's bringing in outsiders. The problem is he didn't have General Kelly there at the beginning. He didn't have somebody who knows this is how things should work. So we're going to limit access. We're going to do these things. I'm sure looking back, people have been like, why in the world are we letting this guy in here? He can't guarantee he's going to write anything positive or anything like that. Mark is called 312-981-7200. Hey, Mark, how are you?
Oh, good morning.
What's going
on? I'm getting cabin fever, but
yeah, tell me about it.
This man seems really proud of that 3-hour time window. I use eHarmony, and I, you know, it's
I'm interested in where this is going, Mark.
It's great when some email exchanges lead to a phone call, but I figure after a 3-hour phone call, I probably know whether I want to be friends with this woman or not. But beyond that, there is so much yet to be known. And this guy just seems real pleased with that 3-hour time window. Boy, I tell you, it's just everything.
Well, and what's funny to me, Mark, is like if it was, say, I spent 3 hours with President Obama, or I spent 3 hours with Ronald Reagan or Jimmy Carter, I think that would carry more, because they were men who probably you couldn't get a lot of time with because of the way the presidency was scheduled. Everything we hear about President Trump, we see all these crazy interviews that he does off the cuff, where he just starts talking to somebody on the record, either not caring or not knowing or whatever. So 3 hours with Trump could seem like, I had one plane flight where he just talked my ear off. Yeah. You know what I mean? And it sounds like this was in little pieces, but I agree. 3 hours with a President Trump is not the wow, you really got some time with him that I would think it was.
Well, let me put it this way. With a lot of presidents, you could say, how many hours does it take to get them to stop putting their best foot forward? With Trump, you say, how many hours does it take him to stop putting his worst foot forward?
Well, I mean, I would agree in that you're right. Any other president that you're talking to, it's going to be hard to cut through the talking points and their agenda to try to get some real answers. Yeah. With President Trump, the first thing out of his mouth is going to be, you know, I don't even know if you ask the question. He starts just telling you stuff because it's what's top of mind. It's what he wants to talk about. And he has not got a filter. So 3 hours with President Trump is like probably 20 hours. So maybe it is impressive that he got 3 hours. He probably got more information than he would have in a month spending with President Obama, right?
It's going to be bravado.
Yeah, yeah, it's a lot of, there's no doubt that President Trump, I mean, look, the book was The Art of the Deal, right? And it's all about being a salesman. A salesman is selling, and nobody sells themselves or their ideas harder or stronger than President Trump, whether they're true or not. He pushes hard his idea and what he wants to get across. That's for sure. Are you going to read the book, Mark?
I don't know. He ends up, I mean, the old saying is he could sell ice cubes to Eskimos. I think he tries to sell hot water to Eskimos.
Wouldn't Eskimos want to buy hot water? I would, if I were an Eskimo, I would think.
No, but he tries too hard to.
All right, Mark, thank you so much for calling in. We appreciate it. 312-981-7200 is the number. Matt Bubala with you here, 720 WGN. Matt Bubala here with you, 720 WGN. 773 says Mike Royko used to encourage people, go ahead, try to ban the books. He knew that the controversy in the news would drive up book sales. That may be true. Lifetime Fitness. I saw this earlier this week. Speaking of all the news and everything that we watch and we deal with and, you know, what you all are going through. I know for a lot of you out there that are President Trump fans, you are very annoyed with this conversation, and I'm sorry. But it is interesting. It's fascinating. And you don't have to hate President Trump to be interested in this book. You have to believe that the guy's telling the truth. If you don't, then it's just frustrating as hell. But even if you like him, you could still read this and still defend him and say, hey, he's a novice getting into this. He's trying to stay away from politicians and career politicians and people who he doesn't believe in. And so this is what he ended up with. And that's okay. You could argue that as well. But Lifetime Fitness, so
you go to work out, and they've got TVs on, big screen TVs, and they've got little monitors on your treadmills. Lifetime Fitness has scrubbed all news cable channels from the screens at its fitness center, saying a growing number of customers think they don't fit a healthy lifestyle. Minnesota company this week dropped CNN, Fox News, MSNBC, and CNBC from TVs in front of various workout machines. While the screens were in view of all fitness, of all in fitness areas, audio could only be heard through earphones. With a few exceptions, TV screens built into treadmills and other cardio machines also currently do not have the ability to display these channels, a Lifetime spokesperson said. However, a second phase in their viewing change will be completed by the end of February, which will allow all the stations to be available on the personal machines. So right now, none of them are available, but what they're trying to do is get them off the big screens, and then, you know, on your personal machine, if that's what you want to watch, you can, which makes sense. USA, A&E, Discovery, HGTV, and the local over-the-air stations and ESPN are all that remain on the visual menu of distractions while sweating off the caloric consequences of the holidays. They added that the clubs do have the flexibility to air programs of interest in their clubs, such as local sporting events from college to pro teams. She said Lifetime pulled the plug on the cable news outlets based on, quote, many member requests received over time across the country and in keeping with our overall healthy way of life philosophy and commitment to provide family-oriented environments free of consistently negative or politically charged content. Responses from members trickling in the first few days since the ban was instituted at their 128 clubs throughout the U.S. and Canada. Company has 10 locations scattered throughout Chicago. We've received both messages of support and others seeking more detail around the decision. A guy in Minnesota said, as someone who enjoys consuming news and politics, I'm disappointed that Lifetime is limiting this option for members. I often time my workout to a particular news program I enjoy to serve as an extra motivation for exercising. There you go. The anger and frustration you could have about the political climate will make you stand on that treadmill more and work even harder.
You need to calm down. Seriously.
A regular at the Lifetime in Bloomington, Minnesota, wrote that his fitness center of choice, quote, has had Fox, CNN, and MSNBC, along with ESPN and other channels, playing simultaneously on about a dozen screens, and there's always a machine available in front of whichever channel you like, so I don't understand the complaints. Another wrote, get enough of unwanted news already daily. Probably don't need it on at the gym. I say good call. Members with smartphones or other devices can still tap Lifetime's Wi-Fi and pull up an all-new station or anything else they wish. I remember we did a story last year that car dealers, there was a car dealer that banned all the news channels from being on. Because, like, where I go, McGrath Honda out by us in Elgin has a huge showroom.
Yeah.
So you do, you know, if you're getting service there, they've got this ginormous area where you can wait, and there's couches, and there's papers, and there's coffee. It's beautiful. Yeah. And just go
hang out
there. They've
got a great coffee machine there.
Yeah, I just hang out there sometimes. Yeah. And they've got all these big screen TVs.
Mm-hmm.
They're not the ones, but somebody, I remember, pulled the plug on them earlier this year and weren't airing that stuff.
No.
It's interesting that CNBC was included. I don't know how political they get. That's mostly about the markets and how the markets are doing. Maybe that has been politically charged this year.
Well, you can't talk markets without politics.
You can. These guys are up. These guys are down.
24/7.
Not 24/7, you're right. But, I mean, enough of them.
And then when they cover, CNBC still covers the latest news headlines.
Yeah.
It's not just all business all the time.
I suppose that's true.
You know.
I suppose that's true. You know, I talked to John Williams earlier today on his show, and he was...
By the way, how's he doing?
He's doing great, I think.
Good.
Why? Just
joking.
Why?
I'm just joking.
Because I want to push him out and take his job, you mean?
No. It's just, you were so casual. By the way, talked to John Williams today.
I'm bringing it up because he was complaining about Fox News not caring any news about this book. And that, you know, he said CNN was overboarding it, but Fox News was completely ignoring it.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was talking to him about the book, I said, John, I think you have to think of it in this way. You're thinking of these as just straight news channels, and they're not. There's so many choices, so many options that channels are catering to what their viewers want.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's necessarily on Fox News's part a calculated decision to not cover this. Well, it is. But, I mean, it's not because... as much of an agenda as do our viewers want to see this? Do they respond positively? Because Fox News could have taken the tact of just destroying Michael Wolff all morning very easily, and they could have covered it nonstop just in a negative way.
Mm-hmm.
But I imagine their data says that their viewers don't want to see this. They want to hear about Hillary and emails. And so they were doing Hillary email stories. And so I think it's more that they're catering to their audiences. And John said, well, they're not news channels then. And I was like, John, that's, come on. They're still reporting news. They're just selecting which news they want to report. And we all kind of do that towards our audiences. That just makes sense. And you can be unhappy with it all you want, but it's not, you know, 50 years ago and all we report is the news and whatever's the news is what we report. It's, you know, catering to your audiences as well.
Well, and this goes back, there's no perfect outlet. And that's why you need to, if you're going to be informed, and again, knowledge is, what do we know of knowledge?
Knowledge is power.
Thank you. And we know that you need to have a wide variety of news sources, not opinion sources necessarily, because you can form your own opinion, but news sources in order to be able to form an informed opinion. And I always go back when I was teaching journalism in high school, I always used that as an example. The slogan, I believe it's New York Times, all the news that's fit to print.
Yeah.
Well, if you know anything about how newspapers are put together, what's the first thing that is put into newspaper pages when they're pasted up?
The headlines? I don't know. What is the first thing?
Ads.
Oh, of course.
And then whatever is left gets the news stories.
Yeah.
So in essence, they are correct. All the news that's fit to print, because whatever news we can fit in there, that's all you're getting.
All the news that's fit to print in the remaining space after we sold the ads.
Exactly.
Is what they really should be. They just shortened it a little bit.
Right, but it sounds more official and professional.
Yeah.
If they say all the news that's fit to print. Well, no, because you're only covering of all the news that's going on in the world that may or may not interest you, you're getting 1 to 2% of it.
Well, and I wonder, though, well, of course.
For example, here in the news, I could report every shooting, every fire, every store burglary, all night long. You wouldn't have time for a show. I could just do that all night long.
Let's not do that.
But eventually, I'd run out of news.
Yeah. Right. 312-981-7200. I was going to say something else there. Now it completely blew my
mind.
Sorry
about that.
That's okay. That happens. You heard the tone a couple of minutes ago. All right. We're going to get away from it. We'll leave the politics aside till next week, I'm sure. Texter said Fox News did cover it today. It was all negative, but they did talk about it all day. So maybe John was referring to the website. I know he was looking at the website when he was reporting on how people were covering different things. When we come back from the news, I do want to talk about the Powerball and the Mega Millions. So Roger reported that somebody from Florida won the Powerball on Friday night. Mega Millions. Powerball, like $570 million, is tonight.
Mm-hmm.
But the sad truth is most of us are not going to win anything. But we're all buying the tickets. We're all getting excited. We're all going to our happy rooms thinking about it. We've talked about this over the years, but there's a story this week that I found, the 10 worst lottery stories ever. It doesn't always pay to win the lottery if you're not ready to handle it. We'll talk about some of those horror stories after we do this. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. 4:03 in the morning, here's your Roger Badish. Can I interrupt just for a second?
Sure.
As a public service announcement, let me just tell anybody that if you're looking for a loan and the term is a 1,000% interest rate, you should not do that loan.
Really? That's pretty high?
That's a rather high interest rate.
Yeah.
Credit cards are fleecing you terribly at like 28, 30%.
Mm-hmm.
That's not good. Payday loan stuff or whoever's been in trouble, I think at like, you know, 50, 100% maybe. 1,000%. You are not digging out of that hole. That's just not looking at the fine print and thinking, okay, boy, these are high paybacks each month. Oh, we borrowed $100, and how much do we owe a month? $500. For how long? The rest of your life. Wow, that's a lot of interest.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Wow. A word to the wise.
Yeah. If it says 1,000%, don't do it.
Well, maybe they thought there was somebody had, like, penciled in a couple of extra zeros.
Maybe they thought, oh, that must be a misprint. I'll just sign this and we'll be happily on our way.
Yeah.
That's why you need to be nicer to older relatives. They have some money and you should borrow from them because they might fleece you, but not for 1,000%.
Nah.
Okay, back to you, Roger.
Okay.
I'm sorry, but above zero is not exciting, Roger. Above 32, we're not living in a Celsius world.
It's above zero.
In Europe, it would have been, like, exciting. It's above
zero. Well, right. It's above zero.
We're in America.
Significantly above zero. 13.
It's not that significant. And I'm sorry, where's the wind chill going to be?
Minus 12.
My God!
But that's only if you go outside.
That's a good point.
Seriously.
If you have like a house or an apartment and it's not run by a slumlord and there's actual heat,
right?
Guess what? You're warm.
That's right.
In fact, we put, because there's a hole in one of our bed sheets, I don't know if it's because the damn dog was on the bed or what, there was a hole, so I had to throw a sheet away. Of course, we don't have spare bed sheets. What we have are flannel sheets.
Okay.
I put the flannel sheets on. We got a flannel comforter. I'm taking a nap tonight, sweating to death.
Well, turn the heat down.
I should have stood outside for a minute.
You should have, in the wind. Would have cooled you down real fast.
Yeah, that it would have.
Would have chipped you out there with the sweat freezing over. Hey, honey, look, it's an ice sculpture. Would you like to know the current temperatures?
I would. I hope you have the lake temperature because I'm thinking about taking a little dip.
Yeah. Zero at O'Hare. Woo-hoo! One at Midway.
Go
three
Midway.
At Portage.
Yes, Portage.
Six along the lakefront.
Yowza.
That Lake Michigan water temperature for all you skinny dippers.
38.
33.
Oh!
Missed close. It by that much.
So one more degree, the damn lake is going to start freezing!
Much of it already has.
Lakes aren't supposed to freeze. God.
At O'Hare, the wind's out of the northwest at 9, and at O'Hare, the wind chill is 15 below zero.
Can't wait to get into my car in another 48 minutes.
There you go. As your coat freezes before you get in there, just that little walk.
When you're wearing jeans and you're walking and it's bad enough, but then you sit down in the car, which means all the jean presses against your flesh, that's not a happy feeling.
Yeah, cold.
Yes, cold. That's what it is.
Real
good
cold.
Good point.
You need an automatic starter or
someone
to run out and start it for you.
Yes. They do, here at WGN Radio, they don't provide the overnight host with somebody to go warm up the car.
Well, I hear daytime has a whole bunch
of
people.
That is Rokon styling that I just don't get.
I'm Roger Badish.
Oh, Violetta, would you go start the car, please?
Thank you.
People don't know that's Roe's real voice.
Oh,
he does
is?
That American
really?
Accent, so he sounds like an average Joe when he does the show. But he talks like this off the air.
Oh, I did not know that.
Oh, yeah. You should see him.
I only hear him on the radio.
Wow.
I wouldn't know.
Wow.
Well, the little things you know behind the scenes.
Crazy.
Guess where I am? In the WGN newsroom. I'm ready to join the conversation whenever a story changes on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Oh, that's Snow by the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Something's wrong with it, though. It's like not playing in full. There it is. Matt Bubal here with you for another 47 minutes on 720 WGN. 312-981-7200 is the number. You're welcome to call. You're welcome to text. Reporting from Dixon, Illinois, 847 says it's a balmy negative 12 here in Dixon. I think they said negative 12. They put a dash there. I didn't know if they just meant a balmy and then 12.
That
I think they're
be.
Saying negative 12.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what the wind chill.
Well, let's...
Roger will look it up, of course.
Check.
While I prepare to tell you why you're happy you didn't win the lottery. Or won't win it tonight.
I'm not happy.
Well...
I wanted
to
win it.
You're happy you're
Ooh,
not.
Actually, Dixon?
Yeah.
Ooh. See, the wind's only, the wind's only about 2 miles an hour out there, so it's not too bad. But the temperature, the air temp, 16 below.
Wow, that's without the wind chill?
That's without the wind
Hoo-jah.
Chill. Hello.
That'll freeze your barnacles real quick.
You think?
I do. I don't want to find out, but I think.
Wind's out of the north at 2 miles an hour.
God, thank God it's not gusting like the bomb cyclone.
Yeah.
Then they'd really be in trouble. Okay, let's talk about this.
Let's talk money.
Did you have Powerball tickets for Friday night? You didn't.
I haven't bought tickets in years.
Whenever it gets, now this is silly, but whenever it gets over $100 million, I used to buy. Honestly, now it's like not until it's in the news and it's like $300 million, then I start buying. So, and Colleen always yells at me not to waste too much money on it. So I bought just three tickets. But you know, both of it used to be like one of them was $2 and one was only $1. Now both of them are $2 a ticket.
Oh, okay.
So I had three for the Powerball. I have three for the Mega Millions. And, you know,
that's not bad. $12?
No, right? $6. $2 a thing.
Three times. You said you had three
tickets. They're $2 each.
That's six, and then three for the other one, which is six. That's $12.
Yes, for the weekend I spent $12. You're right. I apologize. Okay.
I'm sorry. You had me wondering, what was I talking about?
Yeah, so apparently I didn't win the Powerball.
No.
Although maybe I won. You said something like $10 million winners?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I'll look that up. But none in Illinois.
No.
Yeah, there were no winners in Illinois of the big money.
Thanks a lot, Powerball.
Yeah.
So I still have some Mega Millions for tonight. So we're going to hope that maybe something
happens. There you go. Happens. $570
million. But let's talk about why. So Colleen is always like, you know, I only play it when it's big. And Colleen always says she would not want to win more than
$100,000.
$100,000? $100,000 is her cutoff. Anything above that, she does not want to win because she thinks it would bring nothing but problems.
But, all right. Wait, what are her reasons?
Hold on 1 second.
Okay.
Jess, you know somebody that won the lottery? Turn your microphone on, young lady.
Yes.
Like, won how much in the lottery?
I don't remember how much it was, but it's my neighbor's relative.
Was it life-changing, like millions and millions of dollars, or was it like they won the pick three and won $3,000?
No, it was a lot.
They won millions and millions. Really? And did they have a good life after that, or did you ever hear anything about it? Or
from what I've been told, it all turned out to be negative.
Oh,
they bought like a company, and then shortly after that, they ended up going bankrupt because all their kids and other relatives just tried to squeeze money out of them.
See that?
And then it just turned into like a big family feud.
And that happens. And I will tell you, Roger, we've talked about this before over the years, I think, because I passed the lottery billboards on the Kennedy on the way into town.
Oh, the ones that show how much?
They change, and they show how much they're at. And it used to be just one of them. Now it shows both of them. And when they're at this, I pass that by and I see it. And then the rest of the ride down, I'm in my happy room. I'm dead serious with this. I have planned out probably more than anybody ever what would happen if I won that type of money. I have concentric circles of friends and levels of money they would get. I would give people money because there's a threshold on how much you can give somebody before taxes.
Right.
I believe it's $20,000. If I'm correct on this, I believe it used to be $20,000 per person. So if Colleen and I,
well, you know, the tax laws just changed.
They did. Yeah. It probably changed for the better for this, but. If Colleen and I were giving money, say, to Jess, I believe that the two of us could give her $40,000 without any taxes being taken away. Maybe I'm wrong on that. Maybe it's $20,000 combined altogether. I'm not sure.
The annual exclusion applies to gifts to each donee. In other words, if you give each of your children $11,000, this is back in, let's move it up a little more, $14,000 on or after January 1st, 2013, the annual exclusion applies to each gift. The annual exclusion for up through 2017 is $14,000.
But that's per person. So maybe it's $28,000 then between the two. Like if you and your wife did it, you'd be $28,000.
Right, that'd
maybe
be 28.
Something like
that.
Yeah,
right.
Okay, so that would be my plan is like I would give so many people the maximum you could give without them having to pay taxes on it or losing more money to the government each year. For a bunch of years, things like that. And I have concentric circles of how much people would get, yada, yada, yada. And then I'd give a certain amount to charity. I'd probably fund Black Dog, whatever. I mean, I got plans for it.
Yeah, so
and
do I.
And Colleen's always, no, we can't. I said, honey, we're going to be the ones that defy the odds. We're going to make this work.
Mm-hmm.
You got to be like, I think you got to run it like a business, quite honestly.
Well, the experts, from what I remember, recommend that you, if you win big money, that you do not call the lottery office yet. You don't report it. You go get a lawyer.
Absolutely.
And you get a financial expert to help you, and you form a corporation.
Set everything up.
Yes.
And I believe you have 1 year to claim, as difficult as this would be, because you don't want to bring as much attention to yourself as possible.
Mm-hmm.
But I think part of the laws are to claim it, you got to be willing to do a press conference or something, something, something.
Exactly. You have to have your
I would
your
definitely try to bury that
name.
On a Friday night somehow if yeah. I could.
Well,
like
you know they're not going to do that.
Well,
the,
I, you
the
could probably,
lottery people
you could probably do a little demanding yourself on it.
Mm,
nah, you could.
Yeah.
By the way, 708 just texted a picture from their car.
Yeah.
Negative 16 in Manteno, Illinois.
Yep.
Hello. Okay, here's why you don't want to win. Thomas and Denise Rossi were married for 25 years. Thomas thought they were happily married. In fact, he was stunned when his wife presented him with divorce papers. Denise said she'd been unhappy for some time because her husband was always broke. She didn't disclose that she had just won the lottery 2 days before. What happened was she didn't realize that in California, there are laws against not disclosing assets during divorce proceedings. Her act of greed ended up being her downfall. The courts discovered her deception and awarded all of her winnings to her ex-husband.
Wah, wah,
if she had been honest from the beginning, she would have gotten half. He would have gotten half. Boom. All right. Andrew Jack Whitaker. This is one of the most famous ones. He was already a millionaire, but he won $315 million from a Powerball ticket. This is the guy who kept having issues at strip clubs.
Oh, yeah. Was this the one where he had all his money in a briefcase?
He had a $500,000 stolen from his car.
Yeah.
At a strip club.
Yes, I remember that one.
That's a bad night at the strip club. I mean, we've all had nights that, you know, you don't want to tell the wife about what were you doing.
Yeah, right.
But none of us have had to come home and go, you were where? Strip club. And what happened? $500,000.
How much cash did you have on you? Well, I had a briefcase full.
Can you imagine? If he's at the strip club, do you think it was all in singles? 500,000 singles? These poor guys were hauling away like, dude, can we have some 20s? God, I know you like the strip clubs. So that, and that's not even the worst of it. Not only did he lose all, he lost. He later said that thieves also emptied his bank accounts. I don't know the veracity of that.
Yeah.
But he supposedly lost all the money. His granddaughter died of a drug overdose, mm-hmm. and his daughter died 5 years later. And at the time of her death, he said, I wish I'd torn that ticket up. He kind of blamed the way his life had gone.
This was like about 20 years ago or something like that.
His daughter died in 2009. And the granddaughter died in 2004. But yeah, it was about 20 years ago, I think, when he actually won that Powerball. Janet Lee, 60, belonged in a group that she took installments, $620,000 installment payments.
Mm-hmm.
But she donated a ton to charity, which seems great. And what a good idea, right?
Right.
But what happens, I think, to a lot of people who decide, no, I'm just going to take the annual payment. They end up spending money. They end up wanting more money. They know they've got more coming. So then somebody else says, well, I'll give you a lump sum, and then I'll take the payments. So she takes a lump sum buyout later on, and 10 years after she won $18 million, she filed for bankruptcy.
Yeah.
2001, she only had $700 to her name. But not only was she in debt, not only did she only have $700 to her name after winning $18 million, she was $2.5 million in debt.
God,
so clearly,
how do you spend that much?
You find a way.
Seriously.
Kelly Rogers. So in America, you can't win the lottery or play the lottery unless you're 18.
Okay.
British teenager Kelly Rogers won $3 million in July 2003 when she was only 16. That was legal. But she then spent hundreds of thousands of dollars pampering her loved ones, buying presents like cars and homes, taking them on lavish trips, buying her own breast implants and designer clothing.
Jeez.
6 years later, she was facing bankruptcy. And attempted suicide several times. She now works three jobs and lives with her mother. William Post III grew up in an orphanage. When he struck it rich, he was surviving on disability payments. Before his big win, he had less than $3 in his checking account.
Oh,
won $16.2 million. What a happy ending.
Right.
He not only fell victim to his own poor spending habits, but like many on the list, tragedy also struck shortly after he was handed the first check. In the first 3 months alone, he blew through $500,000, mm-hmm. the amount of his first annual payment, and ended up in debt for another $500,000.
Oh, my gosh.
His own brother hired a hitman to try and kill both him and his wife. Other relatives were almost as destructive, convincing him to invest the money in terrible business ventures. Ended up filing bankruptcy and spending time in jail for firing a gun at a bill collector.
Wow.
That's not a good way to win the lottery.
No.
Ibi Rancaioli. I'm sure I'm not pronouncing that right.
Easy for you to say.
Many of the people on this list lost money, homes, and even their marriages, but not many ended up losing their lives thanks to their lottery winnings. But IBI. How would you pronounce it?
IBI
is a story like no other. Dr. Joseph Ranchioli was charged with murder in the poisoning of his lottery winner wife, Ibby. Oh, she.
Wait, I think I remember this one, too.
He claims he was merely trying to numb her arms to take her blood for some health tests, but there were needle marks all over her body and a large amount of painkillers in her system. After his wife's death, he was in for an unpleasant surprise of his own, however. When he went to the family safe where they kept the money, he found that it was all gone. His wife had illegally signed bank documents transferring all the winnings over to her sole possession, and she'd handed out large amounts of that money to her three children, only two of which her husband knew about.
Yeeps.
Okay. Billy Bob Harrell Jr. Won $31 million in the Texas Lotto in 1997. Prior to his winning, his family was mostly broke as he moved between low-paying jobs. When that first payout hit, he did what many of us would do. He quit his job at Home Depot, took his family on vacation to Hawaii, donated tens of thousands of dollars, bought houses and cars for his loved ones, even donated almost 500 turkeys to the poor. Harold had to change his phone number repeatedly because strangers were calling him left and right asking for donations. On top of it all, he made a bad deal with a company that gives lottery winners a lump sum payment in exchange for their yearly winnings. Never a good thing to do, it seems, losing out on a ton of money. If that weren't bad enough, his personal life started to fall apart. His wife Barbara Jean left him less than a year after he won. He told his financial advisor that winning the lottery was the worst thing that ever happened to me. Harold was found dead inside his home about 20 months after the win. Cause of death, a self-inflicted gunshot wound.
Oh, my God.
Iruj Khan, an immigrant from India living in Chicago, had all but given up on gambling until one day he randomly bought a scratch-off ticket. That ticket would end up being worth $1 million. He was ecstatic, even giving the clerk he bought the ticket from $100, saying he'd give him more, but that was all he had on him at the time. Khan chose to take his winnings as a lump sum payment, which came at just under $500,000 after taxes. The day the check arrived, Khan had dinner with his family, including his wife, his daughter from another relationship, and his father-in-law. Khan's wife made lamb curry to celebrate. Later that night, before he could even cash the check, Khan became incredibly ill and died at the hospital. At first, his death was ruled to be due to natural causes, hardening of the arteries. It wasn't until his brother pressed for an autopsy that they discovered something more sinister. He died from cyanide poisoning. His wife and daughter ended up splitting the winnings. We got to look that story up, because didn't somebody get charged in that?
I'm not sure. What's the name again?
Iruj, U-R-O-O-J, Khan, K-H-A.
Yes, I remember that one too.
While you're looking that up, second on the list, Abraham Shakespeare. Winning the lottery ticket couldn't have been sold to a nicer guy. Abraham Shakespeare was an American laborer who won big with the lottery ticket he bought on a whim. He had struggled to hold on to the cash, but unlike some people who merely blow their winnings on extravagant luxuries, Shakespeare helped people whenever he could. In fact, he gave a large chunk of the money away before his life took a turn for the worse. According to the mother of one of Shakespeare's sons, people were always hounding him for money. People would show up at the house begging to stay with him. He'd often let homeless people stay with him as well. And it very well could have been that kindness got him killed. Shortly after winning the lottery, he was befriended by Dee Dee Moore. Dee Dee offered to help him manage the rest of his winnings, but instead the woman stole from Shakespeare. At first, when he went missing, she told everyone he ran away from those begging for his money, and she also sent text messages from his phone. The text messages were red flags because, according to his family, Shakespeare was mostly illiterate. Investigators discovered Shakespeare's body under a concrete slab at a home that Moore put under a boyfriend's name, and everything came crashing down. Though Moore didn't go down without a fight, she tried to blame drug dealers and even her old 14-year-old son for Shakespeare's death. On December 10, 2012, she was convicted of first-degree murder and sentenced to life in prison without parole.
The reason why I remember the Khan story,
mm-hmm.
It was from here.
Yeah, it's from Chicago.
Yeah. Iruj Khan, couldn't believe his luck, bought it at 7-Eleven. Let's see here. Cook County medical examiners ruled he died of natural causes, no sign of trauma. After a grieving relative, persuaded to take a dose. Tribune revealed the details of the death in January 2013, setting off an international, this is from a Tribune story, setting off an international media storm for a murder mystery that one police official at the time compared to an Agatha Christie novel. Now with the passing of the fifth anniversary, and that this story is from July 25th of 2017, so that was 5 years after Khan's death, Chicago police continue to have little to say about their investigation. No one has ever been charged.
Oh.
With one of the strangest killings in years.
They know he died of cyanide poisoning and there's nobody been charged? At a family dinner?
Yep. Khan's loved ones are frustrated. God. I keep getting the same answer. They are looking for a witness. How long is it going to take? Khan's older brother, Imtiaz, said in his thick Indian accent during an interview last week at his West Suburban home. Who could be the witness? A police source familiar with the case told the Tribune the investigation remains at a standstill because people close to Khan who might have information about his death have not been forthcoming with detectives.
Well, because one of them killed him. His loved ones are very upset, but not that upset.
Yeah.
Winning $20 million should be the start of a wonderful new chapter of one's life, or so you would think. For Jeffrey Dampierre, his winnings helped him launch his own gourmet popcorn business, along with the ability to buy gifts for friends and family. This included his sister-in-law, Victoria, with whom he was having an affair. It seems Dampier should have thought twice about spoiling his beloved mistress, as she wasn't feeling so benevolent herself. Victoria and her boyfriend Nathaniel decided to rob Dampier, since apparently the gifts he was buying for her weren't already enough. They bound his hands and feet together, and this is where the robbery took a gruesome turn. Nathaniel reportedly turned to Victoria and told her, "Shoot him or I'll shoot you." That's a bad boyfriend. Choosing to save her own skin, Victoria shot Dampier in the back of the head, killing him. All of this over some money. It makes you wonder if winning the lottery is all it's cracked up to be.
Wow.
Ain't that the truth?
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So I
have plans.
Yep. They don't include getting killed or going bankrupt, correct?
No, not going bankrupt, because Bridget is as frugal as I am. But I do have plans for taking care of a lot of people and a lot of things. And then disappearing to my private island.
Now, you didn't buy tickets.
No, I don't.
So, you know, it's really going to be tough for you to win that lottery.
Yeah.
You have even worse odds than the rest of us.
I know. It's zero.
224 says these lottery winners are like those athletes who just piss away the money that they make. And there are a lot of athletes who make a lot of money. And then suddenly they're bankrupt years later down the
road.
And
it's not that people don't try to help them, especially college athletes.
And I think we see less and less of that because I think the leagues are much better now about getting to the rookies and saying, don't have those six guys you grew up with hanging out all the time, living off you. Invest it, put it away. This, especially in the NFL, likely your career is 2 years at best. That signing bonus needs to last you the rest of your life. Put it away, put it away. When you win the lottery, there's no like... I don't think Powerball and Mega Millions has a financial advisor that shows up at your door that says, let us help you on your own. They ought to do that, though.
I agree.
Maybe we should offer that service.
Well, if they have, I would be happy to offer that service.
Me too.
I only charge
35%.
How much?
I said 35. What were you going?
I was
going
to go about 37.
No. I'm cheaper. I'm going to undercut you on the market.
Yeah.
All right. 4:32 in the morning. We're running behind. Let's check the news headlines, Mr. Battish. 4:37 in the morning. Matt Bubala with you here on the Matt Bubala Show. Give us a like on Facebook, the Matt Bubala Show on Facebook. Please throw us a like there. Follow us on Twitter at Matt Bubala. This week, no need to fear. Chicago's Best has great food and great beer. Don't miss Chicago's Best Brew Pubs at Sunday night at 10 on WGN TV. Back to a break in a minute. Here is my tip for the new year. Write this down, everybody. I'm going to make your lives much better.
Well, let me get a pen. Oh, what the heck? Go ahead.
Okay. Here's what I've done. I've told you that one of my New Year's resolutions every single year is to get more organized.
Yes.
And it is.
Yes.
And one thing I've done that is going to greatly help me, I believe, this year, because what happens is, with my email, with work and everything else, I get all these emails every day, probably like 100 a day, that I have no interest in. And I delete them or I pass by them because there's something that I need and then I don't get back to them. And suddenly, after a few months, I'm at several thousand emails in my inbox and undoubtedly passing by some things I should be looking at, whatever, whatever, whatever. I have been very good because about a month, sometime after Thanksgiving, I decided to really start working on my inbox. And I have what I normally had, I think I had it up to about, there were 8,000 emails in there.
Wow.
I got it down to under 100. And my goal now is every day it's got to stay under 100.
Okay.
Right now, as we sit here, it's 80 messages in there.
Very good.
And everything else
gets in. Are those 80 that you need to see?
80. Well, there's so there's about 20 in here right now that I'll look at and then delete, and another 20 or so that'll go into folders. you know, some that need to be responded to, some that are just saved for later, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I've had it lately when I'm really good at around 50 or 40. There's some things I still have up there that are old, like a gift card that I got that I want to keep top of mind, some different things like that.
But don't you go into your email when you get the junk stuff, the stuff that is part of that thousand that you know you're not going to want to look at, just stuff that ends up in your inbox?
Mm-hmm.
Don't you go into the settings and put that address in as blocked?
I don't.
Okay.
I don't. I've never done that. But here's what I have started doing, and this is what I'm so proud of myself about. I unsubscribed from about 50 different emails over the last 2 days. So, let's see, what do I have here?
Like Wall Street Journal or something, or some news feed?
If it's anything it's mostly more some sort of ad or some sort of news thing. So, like, there's something called Editor at Large.
Okay.
And that is sending me some type of information about some sort of homemaking magazine and a bunch of different things like that.
Okay.
Unsubscribe. Let's see. What else? There was there's a ticket making service I never use. There was like some things I keep because they send me ads for stuff that I might need for work or different things like that. Kickstarter sends me all these updates because I was on Kickstarter once. I unsubscribe for them.
Okay.
USA Hockey, because I play hockey still. I have to, so whatever. A couple of different like art centers or theaters that I just never am buying tickets from.
Right.
I mean, there were about 50 different things that I'm just getting things from all the time, every day. There's some news wires. Like, there's an international airline news thing and some other news things that send updates like 3-4 times a day.
Mm.
And if I'm reading them for the show, that's one thing. But I'm like, okay, when's the last time I really looked at one of these?
Right.
And I was being harder about it. I'm like, okay, unsubscribe. And I unsubscribe from about 50 things.
Not bad.
And it has made life so much easier. And now I'm not wasting 10 minutes a day just deleting crappy emails.
Sure.
They're not there in the first place. For the first day, it threw me off because I would check my email at night and be like, oh, what's wrong with this? I should have more emails there. I'm like, oh, wait, the junk isn't coming in.
Right.
That's why. And it's really nice. I'm very proud of myself.
Well, congratulations. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's 6 days in, and you've been doing this since before the new year, right?
The unsubscribing just started a couple days ago.
Okay.
But trying to keep the email cleaner was from a while back.
Very good.
So that's a start.
I've got 6 days, actually 7 days straight, because I start on the last day of the new year. 7 days writing my book.
Oh, good.
Yep.
Will we have that by the end of the year?
You won't have it by the end of the year because it's going to take me
through the end
of the year. Will
Roger have it done by the end of the year? The first draft.
First draft, maybe in January.
So you have 1 year to get it done.
Yeah, it's the theory for my book requires me to take 365 days.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's just that's the way that it's set up. It's not like I'm giving myself 1 hour a day to write for 365. Yeah. No, it's the idea behind the book. It confines me into that time period.
Well, it's a good thing it's not leap year. You'd have an extra day of writing ahead of you.
Oh, man, now you... Jeez, look what you just did. Another day. I can't take it anymore.
Matt Bubala with you. 720 WGN. Matt Bubala here with you. 720 WGN. Hi. Another 15 minutes. We'll have Max and Orion with the morning show here on 720 WGN. Roger, I don't know if you saw the story earlier this week out of Taiwan. A mom in Taiwan signed a contract with her son in 1997 when he was 20 years old.
Mm-hmm.
He was going to become a dentist. She said, okay, I'll pay for the schooling, but here's what you're going to do. You'll give me 60% of your income once you become a dentist until you pay me up to $1.7 million.
Wow.
He said, okay.
Well, she's putting him through. Yeah.
She had to sue him for the money.
Oh, jeez.
A court in Taiwan has ordered a dentist to pay back his mother for putting him through dentistry school, $967,000. The son maintains that because he worked at his mother's dental clinic for years, he helped her earn back that amount and more. He also told the court that it was just plain wrong for a mother to make an ironclad contract demanding reimbursement for doing what parents often do voluntarily. The contract, he argued, is, quote, a deviation from social morals and against good customs and public order and therefore should be invalid. Court disagreed, ruling that a deal is a deal. He signed it as an adult. The ruling ordered that the dentist, identified as Dr. Chu, forks over an upbringing fee of about $750,000 along with interest for a total of $967,000. Mom had struck the same deal with another son, but he settled up for a lesser amount.
Wow.
The BBC notes that children are legally obligated in Taiwan to care for their aging parents, though the issue rarely reaches the courts.
Oh.
So she's going to be bringing them back to court because she ain't getting treated very well as she gets older by those two kids. Jeez. Wait, I have to do what? I have to care for the mom that sued me for $1.7 million? Yeah, I'll take care of her. Move her right in. Come on in, Mom! That becomes the movie Misery.
Yes. God. My goodness gracious.
Show that to my kids before they head off to college.
See, this is what I'm talking about.
Here's the deal we'll make.
All the news that's fit to print, you are not getting all the news.
Maybe that was in the New York Times. You don't know.
Well.
Probably wasn't.
Above or below the fold?
Probably below.
Yeah.
Probably below. Did you see that? So McDonald's, store number one in Des Plaines, became a museum many years ago.
Yeah.
For the last 10 years, it's been closed, so you could just kind of peek inside of it.
Because of?
Flooding issues,
that's
I believe.
That's right, yeah.
And
technically, it is not number one. Because the number one store was demolished.
Well,
this replica.
Yeah, this is the replica.
Right.
That became a museum.
Right.
But it's on the land where number one was, correct?
Right.
And now McDonald's said, yeah, we're done with this.
Mm-hmm.
And so they started tearing it down. They're donating the land to Des Plaines.
Mm-hmm.
I remember Volo had said they would take the McDonald's and put it up there. Did that happen?
I don't think so, but I heard something about the arches being saved.
Yeah, I saw the sign and the arches being carted off on a truck.
Yeah, I think the arches are being saved. I'm not sure where they're going.
I believe the Volo Auto Museum had offered to buy or take off their hands the McDonald's, which sounds like a great idea.
Yeah, but then wouldn't they, you know, have to dismantle it and then rebuild it up at the Volo site?
I imagine they would, but if they're willing to take that on, they should do, and I haven't been to Volo in a long time. The last time I was at the Volo Auto Museum, I was there with a fan van doing an event for WGN Radio. And I don't remember what the food attractions are there, but open the damn McDonald's up.
That would be perfect.
It would be a great idea. Yeah. A 50s car hop thing going on.
Or, you know, another place where it would be nice?
No.
Is the train museum.
In Union?
Yeah.
That's a wonderful train museum. Been there many times.
Haven't been there in a couple of years, but the restaurant that they opened up, which I don't think at the time was open yet. They were still doing construction. But it didn't look like it would have been on the par with having a McDonald's there.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that whole thing is like almost all volunteer and donations.
Yeah.
It's not like the Bolo, which is this whoever it is, the family owns that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think either place is a good idea.
Yeah.
Or take it. There's still a couple. I know this is crazy and way off, but there's a couple of drive-in theater still.
Oh, yeah.
There's one out in West Chicago or something like that I've been to. Bring it out there.
Yeah, sure.
That
why
seems
not?
To fit for me. I don't know.
Classy.
It would be classy, yes. That's what that would be.
Well, it would be. Okay. It would be cool. It would be classy to go up there and see a drive-in movie and head over to the McDonald's and...
Speaking of movies, so this was a big movie week for the Bubala family while everybody was on vacation.
Okay.
First, we took the kids, I think I talked about this last week, we took the kids to see Murder on the Orient Express, the new version, which Kenneth Branagh did, which was actually really good. And the kids all enjoyed. Three 12-year-old kids and a 16-year-old actually liked it. So that was good. Then Colleen and I saw, we went and saw The Darkest Hour.
That is the Churchill.
Gary Oldman is Churchill.
Yeah.
And it was good. Okay. Now, the funny thing was, we were debating, we showed kids previews for the Orient Express and for Darkest Hour.
Mm-hmm.
And I really wanted to go see Darkest Hour, and the kids all voted on Orient Express. Thank God they did. They would have been bored out of their skulls at Darkest Hour.
Really?
Well, it's just a lot of conversation in Parliament and with the king and things like that. It's not a lot of action.
Very British.
Yeah, it's not a lot of action.
Yeah.
But Oldman is very good. It's very amazing to look at him and think that that's Gary Oldman.
Right.
Because it does not look like him, that's for sure. I mean, they did a pretty fascinating job, and I'm pretty sure he's going to... I'll guarantee you he gets an Oscar nomination. I'll be surprised if he doesn't win, because it's a pretty powerful, and he's so made up, and you know, embodies the role so well. It's pretty fascinating. What's crazy is that the Darkest Hour really centers around quite a bit Dunkirk,
right?
And the escape or the retrieval of all these soldiers from Dunkirk, and the movie Dunkirk was out earlier this year. You'd think the two were companion pieces. I don't think they were made by the same people at all, or same movie companies even necessarily, but it's amazing that in 1 year, a thing I'd never heard of in my life, Dunkirk, has major roles in two different movies.
Dunkirk?
I had never heard of Dunkirk.
Wow.
I don't know my history. I'm going to guess that 80% of people my age had not heard of Dunkirk.
I would go along with that.
Yeah. So so good for Dunkirk getting their due.
Yeah.
What was neat about The Darkest Hour is a lot of it takes place in the war rooms in London, and I've been in those.
And that
was my favorite part of going to London.
I saw a documentary about those, and they went back to the ones, I guess the same ones you say you went to. And they showed the rooms and how to get to them and the corridors and everything.
Yeah,
and
you can still go through there and tour them. It's awesome.
Wow.
It's really cool. So we saw that, and then we took the kids to see Daddy's Home 2.
Oh, come. Never mind. Go ahead.
Mark Wahlberg and Will Ferrell.
And they loved it.
With John Lithgow and Mel Gibson, which I wasn't thrilled about.
Mm-hmm.
Because Mel Gibson's got his baggage.
Mm-hmm.
That's for sure. And it's amazing to me that he gets work, but he does. Because of everything he's said and done, you'd think that would...
Sure.
But hell, Woody Allen's making movies, Roman Polanski's making movies, these guys somehow escaped the wrath.
Yeah.
But I can't believe that the movie was actually good. It was.
No way.
I laughed a lot during it.
No.
I did. Why are you upset by that?
I'm very particular about movies that I spend my time watching. Very particular. And I look at a lot of trailers, and I read about a lot of the movies, and I follow the reviews, and this one right off the bat was like, are you kidding me? This is the most inane, mind-numbing piece of filmmaking I've ever seen.
There has been way more inane, mind-numbing filmmaking than this.
I agree.
I'm not saying...
There's a ton of it out
there. It's not enriching. It's not, you know, making my life better.
Life-fulfilling.
I laughed out loud a few times. And it was at the Cheap Show. It was $6 a person.
Oh,
we had gift cards.
There
we
you
didn't
go.
Pay a dime. The kids snuck in apple pie and chocolate cake. It was a hell of a day.
Wow.
Yeah, you should have seen him walking in, because we had gone to Boston Market next door.
Yeah.
And Anna really wanted this apple pie, and we didn't have candy, and I don't like spending on money at the theater. It's so expensive. So I bought them pie, and the boys bought chocolate cake slices, and then they stuffed them in their coats, and they walked
Good
in.
Lord.
Yeah, I know. It's terrible. I'm raising a bunch of heathens and hellions and whatever
hooligans.
Else. Hooligans. That's what we got going on. All right, quick break. Then we'll say hi to O from WGN West next. Thanks for staying up even later with us, everybody. Thanks to Sonia Van Meter, who was with us for an hour earlier tonight. Follow her on Twitter at BourbonFace. Follow me on Twitter at Matt Bubala, and on Facebook, The Matt Bubala Show. Right now, let's head up to Arizona and say hello to a hopefully much warmer than us, Orion Samuelson.